Bedwin from UCT with us. Good afternoon, sir. This is, I think, our last input on this act. Let's see. Yeah. All right, this is our last one on this act. We've had the other two already. Well, so we give you about 10 minutes to make your main points, the issues you'd like to look at in amendments. Please concentrate on those, and then we may comment or aid you further on the matter.
Thank you, Chair. I'll leave it to you, Chair. Do you want to interrupt me for clarification as
sure.
You go along, please do. My comments are under two headings. First, general remarks, and then specific suggestions. To the general remarks first, let's just bear in mind where we're coming from, which is the existing Living Marine Resources Act, which essentially has two sections dealing with protected areas, one form or another. Section 15, which is fisheries management areas, which essentially are areas where there are restrictions on take or use, and the old Section 43, which this is about amending, essentially, or transferring to another act, marine protected areas, and the essence of the way that was worded in the MLRA is those are areas with no take whatsoever. There were very sparse exceptions to that. And that was a problem in part because I might almost say it was more honored in the reach and the observation. And it doesn't make sense in some cases because if you want to protect, for instance, a substrate in a particular area from trawling, there's no reason to restrict pelagic fishing, which is surface fishing, which doesn't cause any damage in that respect. Now, when we go to the key proposed change in the Protected Areas Bill, and I apologize for a mysterious little bee finding its way into my written comment here, it's a bit difficult with Mr. Gates and the way he does his inserts in MS Word document. But the key point about the amendment is for marine protected areas, the take or use may be allowed in MPAs. And I think this is a really welcome change. It's in step with international practice. And the example I give of that is the Convention on Biological Diversity, which gives a particular definition for a protected area, which pretty much is in line with the way this is used internationally. And that is, it doesn't say no use or no take whatsoever. It just says it's to be managed to achieve specific conservation objectives. Now, having said that, there are nevertheless difficulties. In colloquial usage, and even in international colloquial usage, scientific and management, protect still has that connotation of leave alone, no take, whereas conserve can include use and sustainable use. The problem with these two words is unless you're careful, you can run into problems of interpretations. And I think, though this is a problem, it's one that's readily solved, and that is, I think definitions have to be added to the Act to make clear what it is exactly what is meant by protected areas. What I've offered to you is, for instance, the CBD, Convention on Biological Diversity definition, because unless you know what you're talking about and you have it in the definition, things are not clear. The second, and this is my last point under general, is the second difficulty I see at the moment is in the existing MLRA, Section 15 remains for under the heading Fisheries Management Areas, and that's a section which allows restrictions on use or take in an area. If you go to the proposed change to this Act, which is now in, should have been 42, not 43, essentially what that new definition says is, or the new wording for the Act says, is there should be restrictions on take in an area. So I do come to the question, what's the difference? We now have fisheries management areas in the MLRA Act, and the proposal says marine protected areas in the Protected Areas Act, but essentially they amount to the same thing. They're subtle differences, but in essence, I'd ask what's the difference. And with that comes a problem, which was in fact the problem that this amendment was supposed to solve, which is which department has authority. You now have a situation where if you pass the amendment as it is, you have essentially two acts, both of which define marine areas in which restrictions can be placed, but with different departments responsible. So much for general comments. Two specific suggestions. I want to go to section 22A2, which is the one that deals with the purpose for marine protected areas. first of all, an existing subclause of that to restrict or prohibit activities which may have an adverse effect on the environment. I'm concerned about the may, because the word may implies a very weak burden of proof to justify a prohibition here. If necessary, I can go into detail of this, but it's quite beyond the intent of the Rio precautionary principle, which is the sort of international benchmark for this. And I would suggest that the word may there be changed to or likely to. I think that's more in the spirit and of the precautionary principle as agreed in Rio in 1992. Then for certain additions, I'd suggest there are a number of purposes which are laid down in the section 22A2, but one which is not there, which I think is so important that it needs to be explained.
What did you say about the Rio test?
The Rio test is UNCEAD Convention on, the Rio meeting in what's called the Rio Conference on the Environment.
I'm just worried what the text is. You're saying May is too weak for Rio. So what is the Rio test? Is that the Rio one at the bottom? I like it too.
No, Mr. Chairman, let me just expand on that if I may by getting you the extra wording. The wording of that I'm implying as the Rio test is actually quoted from UNCEAD in Rio, Principle 15, and that is the precautionary principle. And it's quite a hard text to read. It says, where there are threats of serious or irreversible damage, so that's a high burden. Lack of full scientific certainty shall not be used as a reason for postponing cost-effective measures to prevent environmental degradation. Now, that's what I called the Rio test. And if you compare that, which is a fairly high burden to take action, with what it says at the moment, may restrict or prohibit activities which may have an adverse effect, it's
very easy. Are you interpreting that correctly on your reading of it, even just what you've read now? Are you interpreting correctly? But it seems to say that the opposite.
Are you saying the Rio is saying the opposite? Or
yeah.
The Rio is a heavy burden.
It says that in the beginning, but if you read the rest of it, it says whatever you read. Lack of scientific certainty should not stop you from protecting.
Correct, but you have to show a threat of serious or irreversible damage. And that is a heavy burden. I've actually just heard arguments in front of the International Court of Justice on this, and they have upheld that that is necessary. One cannot just state, because we have the burden of proof is with their actual case law on us, I believe, that the burden of proof lies with those who oppose the action. They've actually ruled the opposite direction. It's a thing I think you need to take under advisement.
The only thing that precautionary rule, is that the only one you take into consideration? Or would that be one of the things you take into consideration? In some cases, I guess, we want to create a protected area. What is your take on that?
Oh, no, I'm not saying this is the only point. And there are a number of other points in the Act which go to this. But I'm just looking at that word may in the context of this. Remember, you can create a protected area under any of these provisions, and this provision, to my mind, is imposing a very weak burden sufficient to justify the declaration of an area. And I'll come to aspects of that
in a
moment.
Be because you've got restrict or prohibit. You just have prohibit, it's understandable, but that's a complete prohibition. But restricting is not a prohibition, it's restricting. Would that be the reason for the main?
It's arguable. I guess I'm just coming at this from the point of view that if I had to make a case, if this was the law here, and I had to make a case, I have a very weak burden to meet to
but
meet
I,
this
I hear what you're saying, Doctor. I hear what you're saying. You see, I don't have enough knowledge of this whole area to debate with you on the issue. I'm just trying to think in pure terms of how we draft this. I suppose your argument is much stronger if prohibit was just there, then may would be a weaker version, and restrict would be fine with may. Maybe we should then split the two, but okay.
Yeah, I think
I hear what your argument is saying.
Fine, thanks very much. I just, it was the point I wanted to make, and I'll come to a corollary of that in a moment. Okay, with additions, just on this first suggested addition, one of the main, if not the main, practical application of marine protected areas is in fisheries where conventional mechanisms to operate to optimize control are just not practical. It's all very well to say we will control the effort or we will control the catch, but in some fisheries this is just not practical. And though it's not as efficient, from a practical point of view, the way that effort is controlled to keep harvesting sustainable is by declaration of closed areas, whether it be both spatially and often temporally. That has to be done internationally as well. So I think in from the point of view of the, since this is the point, a part of the Act which defines what are the purposes, I think this is a use of protected areas which is worth explicitly stating in the Act. Secondly, so the key, as I say, it's a key management-related purpose of MPAs to facilitate sustainable use. The other suggested addition I'd make is for the to add for the purpose of research to enhance capabilities for appropriate management. Now, as I interpret it, this was really, if you go back to the original, the existing MLRA Act, that was the one provision that allowed for take in what that Act specifies as a marine protected area. And it seems to have got lost in the transfer here, and my suggestion is that, though the words I've offered here are different, is that it should be put back. There's good reason why to get information that enables you to manage more effectively, you should have the option to declare areas closed, not in perpetuity, but for a reasonable proportion of time to get what's called a scientific contrast between harvested and non-harvested areas to better get the information you need to set sustainable yield. So I think that belongs here, as it belonged in the existing MLRA, to not let that opportunity slip. I also suggest a further addition to this clause, and that is, and this ties up perhaps to what I was saying about the precautionary principle, and also my quote from the CBD, that to declare a protected area, there should be a specific rationale justifying the objective of the proposal and the practicality of achieving that objective. This is to go in line with the CBD definition, where you'll note that the purpose of an MPA or protected area, they're talking generally, is to achieve specific conservation objectives. What I'm trying to protect against here is the general approach to say we just want a certain proportion of area declared protected areas. There are all sorts of problems with that, scientifically, also because of trade-offs that are involved. If you want to close an area somewhere, you're losing in other places. If you want to close areas and lose marine catch, you've got to make up that catch to feed people somewhere else on land. You have to fill more forests. There are losses here, and I think it's important that protected areas, marine protected areas at least, they can be certainly very justified, but it should be a prerequisite to be very clear about what the rationale for them is. My last points are rather technical. First of all, the terminology network of protected areas. Network has a very specific meaning both in the dictionary and in science. Network implies areas are connected, so they'd be connected by areas that are also connected to corridors, which are also protected areas. That makes sense in some instances terrestrially, but now with expansion to the marine environment, it doesn't make sense. Animals are much more mobile there. You don't set up necessarily protected areas which have to have corridors between them. And finally, there's something I think has been lost under the consultation process. At the moment, the consultation requires a proposed declaration need be sent only to the owner of land, or they need be sent notification of that so they're aware of the proposal being made. I would suggest, because we have now the marine environment as well, but of course one doesn't have owners of there in the same sense as one has owners of land, so that should be extended to include major users of a marine region. So there's an obligation, in addition to a land protected area, to consult with the owners of that land in marine protected area proposal, to consult with the major users of that marine area. And that's it. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you, Oscar. Mr. Hu, this issue has been raised that there is now a provision for protection of marine both on both pieces of legislation, and what that creates. What is your response to that?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there may be a misconception of the status quo of the legislation. Marine protected areas are being, if you look at the repeal session in MEMPA, it's repealing Section 43. So 43 won't be standing as it is. It will be repealed because that was a section that was administered by the Minister of Responsible for Environmental Affairs. We're doing this so that we can give effect put this in legislation so that we know the mandates are clear. The only piece of legislation regulating marine protected areas now is the Protected Areas Act. In other words, 43 no longer exists, this act exists, and marine protected areas...
This act repeals 43.
It repeals 43, and it doesn't in any way...
So it puts another regime in place.
Correct.
In the place of 43.
Correct.
But, Chair, there's a point, I think, that the Professor makes around Section 15. Which I think that we need to look at. I think that his suggested addition related to the maintenance of a catch effort is more appropriate for a fisheries management area, which is Section 15 under the MORA, perhaps. So we need to, but I do agree with the Professor, we just need to make sure that we're not actually saying essentially the same thing, which is restricted off-take. I would appeal to Ravi and then just to look in detail at that point that and just being made.
The discussion I had with you about replacing those parts of the marine life legislation, which is now with agriculture, to replace that and have our own legislation for that. We haven't done that yet. But I'm thinking about the shark cage diving, the whale stuff. That stuff that's stayed with environment.
We've got it, Chair. We've actually sent those documents to you a while ago. We can resend it.
Is it in here?
No, it's in the TOPS regulation, a member. You dealt with it, the Portfolio Committee dealt with it in member.
I thought that we need an empowering clause in the Act.
We had it in member. The committee already inserted it in member. We've sent that to you together with the regulation.
Biodiversity
Act. The committee made those amendments in the Biodiversity Act some time ago. It went into that amendment.
You weren't around, I think. Others that were there must. We had this discussion, and there was... remember that you wanted to put in amendments in the Biodiversity Act, which Mr. Morgan then raised and said, but we haven't discussed this, there weren't public hearings on it, so we couldn't do that. So it's something that we haven't done in the Biodiversity Act that's still here in the Marine Act. Then I had the further discussions with you about the shark cage diving, that court judgment that's there, which says that this is not clear. Then we agreed that we're going to amend, we're going to have our own legislation and make sure it's not part of the Marine Life, whatever it's called, Act, the Marine Resources Act, that those parts of that Act, which the President's proclamation now shows falls under us and not under them, which is part of that court case, that would then be in separate legislation. And that, as far as I know, has been done.
Chair, I will send the documents to you. I wasn't at the committee. I spoke to Linda and I looked at the NEMA amendment that actually incorporated it. In fact, there were, as I understand it, there was a resolution around it, and the NEMBA now contains provisions about marine species which it didn't before. It also allows for allocation of permits, etc., to deal with the white shark cage diving and the boat-based whale watching. I'll resend those documents to you. We did a briefing to you that talks to the amendments, and how they link to TOPS. So in fact, it has taken place. There may have been questions around it, but there was a resolution because it's now in the Act. It's in NEMBA. I'll send those documents to you again.
Are you saying that all the powers you had under that Act are now deleted in that Act, repealed, and are now in another Act?
Are you sure about
that? I'm positive about that. I'll send everything to you again.
No, don't send it to me, because clearly it's going to get lost on me. I want to just make sure that this has been done, because yeah. I mean, this is not how I remember the sequence of events.
It definitely has happened to you.
Okay.
Chair, I think that you've raised the point, and we'll double check.
Yeah, look, you know, I can still remember what it was. You see, I can remember the crops issue. But then when you guys wanted to go further and make a substantive amendment to NEMBA, Mr. Morgan intervened. And I still remember then we said, okay, if there's controversy about it, we're not going to put it there. And we're going to have to. And then I had a discussion with you guys that there had to be a special either amendment or legislation. And that's my sequence of events. Then the issue of the court case and the other thing came along. So I want to make sure that we've now covered all this. I mean, it worries me that the doctor still is, you know, saying that there's going to be two pieces of legislation that deals with the protected areas now. And I
think that is a technical thing, and we need to just double check for ourselves. There's still a motivation for a fisheries management area where you can do things under agriculture, where you can do things maintain a particular catch effort and so on and so forth. So we just need to be double checked that we're not actually creating inadvertently a duplication of powers. And I think that point is well taken.
All right. Comments? Questions to the doctor? Nothing? Okay, anything from you? Did you want to respond to any of these issues?
No, Chair, only to assist myself, the previous speaker. That's essentially the point I was making, that for practical purposes, a fisheries management area in the existing MNRA, which is Section 15, amounts to the same thing as a marine protected area will be under Section, I'm now using it, 44, the suggested appeal 44A, and I just think it needs some more thought.
Make sure
to be
that
clear. So
there's no two pieces of legislation on dealing with the same issue.
Yes, thank you.
But I would suggest in any case that maybe you guys can talk to the doctor and make sure that all these points he makes, each one of them, whether some of it seems to me some of it's objective and so on, and what he suggested is worth having it there. And then, as I said, I want to make sure that once this legislation is passed, there's no further problems with the ML, whatever it's called. And that everything that the President has said must fall under you, now falls under you. And be very careful. That doesn't mean that it must be in the regulations. You must make sure there's an empowering clause in an act that empowers us to put that stuff in the regulations. So those are the things I want you guys to check very carefully for me, okay? Thank you, Doctor. Thanks for raising the issues, and we will definitely pay good attention. What we usually do is they now go back, look at all these amendments, come back to comments more than they've made now, and then we then process them. So thanks a lot, Doctor.
Thank you.
Is the Law Society here? Still not? That's my profession. As unreliable as you can get. Unreliable, the lawyers. The Shabalalas and the Abadas and the Advocate Radia and all these lot and Galip, the most unreliable lot you can get in the world. They don't come and live up to their obligations. Look at scientists, professors, doctors, they're here. Any lawyers are near here. I mean, you know what? They're making so much money at the moment. It'll be a big lot of money if they came here to make this submission. That's the problem. Hey, I know my profession. All right, those are all the submissions, eh? That Law Society misses out. But remember, all written submissions of the department that haven't been oral submissions, you make it part of your summary. And also your submissions you've got, make it part of it. And the comments we made at the first hearings, also part of all the summary stuff, okay? On the protected areas. So that's finished now. And then Aqua, are we finished with Aqua? Oh, tomorrow's still there. Oh, sorry. There are three submissions till tomorrow, so we'll finish those three off. Those are with which act? Air quality. So NEMLA and air
equality and the other two are just equality. Okay. You can leave, Dr.
Excellent. Thanks. All right. So tomorrow we'll just finish those four submissions and then we can move forward. All right. So ICM. What have you got for me today? Members of Okay, well, it's a bit of a problem. I don't seem to have my documents here that I've written on previously. I bought some here, but it's other documents. Any case, that can't stop us. That'll just slow us down because I don't have my notes. All right, under section one. First issue is access fee. Advocate?
Chair, are we going straight to the task list because we haven't finished the other comment yet?
No, the other general comment, okay. You can do that later.
All right, thanks. Yeah, Chair, I've made a list of the issues that you asked us to go back and look at and reword. Some of them we may have discussed already, but we'll just rehash. The first one was the insertion of a definition for access fee. The issue was that it was very clumsily worded. We said we gave the definition of meaning of fee that is charged to allow a person to get to postal public property, which didn't sound right. We changed that to means a fee that is charged to allow a person to enter postal public property and includes launching from and entering a vehicle launch site with the boat.
That sounds better. Everyone happy? Then the next definition is adverse effect.
It was reclamation, Chair?
No.
Are we going back
to the... Let me do the... Tell you what. The next one is adverse effect, which was in the original bill. There haven't been any further changes or amendments.
No.
Anyone have a problem with adverse effect? The yellow one? Right. Then the next one is authorization. That is just totally being deleted. There's nothing further that's part of that. Everyone happy with that? Correct. When we get to here to one of these colors, then we'll go back to that wording. It's just so that we go through all the amendments that are in front of Parliament. total activities. There's no further changes to that. Anyone have add-in or problems with that? No. Coastal authorization. Everyone happy? No further changes. Deletion of coastal concession and coastal lease. In the original. Anyone have problems with that? Nothing further. And then coastal management line. Whatever that may mean. Means a line determined by an MEC according to the important democratic area within which development will be removed control in order to achieve the object of this act of coastal management objective. Okay. Any worries there? No. Coastal protection zone. No further changes there. Deletion of coastal setback line. Complete deletion. Okay. All right. So here we come now to the First Amendment. Another amendment. This is not in the notes.
Green. Okay, this one was an insertion that the committee had agreed upon prior to, and we didn't have to come back on it.
No, we've never agreed to anything. We only agree now.
Oh, okay. Well,
we give you instructions to go. We give you instructions to go and do things, and then we now tell you whether your instructions are right or whether they're not. So, what is here? What is the green?
It was that the whole issue of putting the subject to subsection 26 didn't make sense in the definition,
yes.
And we deleted it.
So we just went estuary. And in estuary, then there's something in this word. Okay. Everyone happy with that? Remember that we didn't weren't happy with? Coastal zone. Nothing further there. Anyone happy with that? Happy. Estuary. There's green. Yes, we said that maybe an or. So the way you've done it now, anywhere where we've changed something previously, you've made it green, but and you've assumed that that's been accepted. It should have actually been under the amendments.
Yes, my mistake.
No, 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 that's fine. It's just that I'm trying to work out how we must work with this. So those things, amendments are further amendments we must approve. Okay, so that or there is a further amendment. Everyone happy plus the original? Mm-hmm. Here's another green one. Arbor. Oh no, third general discharge authorization. Everyone happy? Fine. Now we've got two harbors here.
That appears to be an error, Jay. It should just be one. They say the same thing.
So we then... No, there is two different ones. Harbour means
sorry,
a port
yes.
Or harbour.
The port was separated out in the definition. If you recall, there were all these calls by Transnet at the time, and we then distinguished, we had to explain to the committee what the difference between a port and a harbour was, and then we separated out the definition. So the revised one...
Harbours are the particular harbours that were mentioned.
Yes. And
a port is something else.
In terms of the national footprint.
Be great.
Yes.
Therefore, you don't include port under harbour.
That's correct.
So, yeah, because you're replacing it. You're replacing it with the green.
If you see, the harbour is actually a new definition.
Yes, but then the old definition falls away because you don't want it.
Yes, true.
So in the original,
yes,
in the original bill, you take out the original words and you put in new ones. You square bracket the first one and you underline the second one. But you can't just substitute and leave it out. You have to go to the original bill, you show that it's a square bracket, and then what you've added now is a underlining, is underlined as an inclusion.
Yes, I will. I'm just confirming that it was in fact in the original wording. And we'll sort that out.
All the yellow was original wording.
Yes.
That's why it's here, isn't it? Have we doubts? Have we got doubts about that? Agreed? All the yellow is original wedding. Alright. So then harbour is the new definition. High water mark, nothing further. Land development plan, nothing further. Land unit, nothing further. Minister, nothing further. Municipality. I thought there was a problem with this. Oh, there's the green. So the green is now what we want, is it?
That's correct, Chair.
It means A, Network District of Local, B, this all looks the same. What, why?
Chair, it is, if you look at the amendment in yellow, we were going to take out all local, and what?
Oh.
Yeah. Now we're just leaving it as it is currently in the Act. In other words, there's not going to be an amendment to the definition.
It's difficult to do like this without my notes. Okay. All right. Let's take it like that. So long as that goes into square brackets. Well, actually. So all that you've done here, you've just not accepted the square brackets.
That's correct, Chair.
Okay, in any case, you know what it is, eh? You'll present it. Then there is a definition of port in green. Which is now why we've distinguished the two. And then I'm assuming that throughout the Act, you've now gone and checked where it should be harbour and where port or where. So you're all happy with that. You made the changes. Right. Then reclamation. That's the second new amendment added here. So if you look at your list there, plus the Act. And all that we've included here is for maintenance purposes. So it's not just sand pumping in general. It's only where it's for maintenance purposes. I think that was the Western Cape's proposal. Okay, happy? Everyone happy? Yes. Alright, definition of C. C, not as in C and B. C as in wet. Not C as in steam. C as in salt water. Why? We've got long stories here.
You want me to summarize?
Yes, summarize and then I'll see you.
Okay, if you recall, Dr. Whittle was concerned with the use of, or with the inclusion indirectly of the definition of estuary in the definition of sea, because she sees them scientifically as two different concepts. We then explained to the committee that we needed to do this for practical purposes so that we could include estuaries when in the dumping of sea provision. The committee then asked us to go back and check all the sections where we use the word sea and make sure that there aren't any unintended consequences, which we then did, and we've listed the sections where it's used. We still believe it's necessary to retain estuaries within the definition of sea.
I don't see estuary yet.
It's in the definition of coastal waters, okay? Coastal waters,
oh, yes.
Yeah.
All right, so what you are amending is you're taking out the words marine waters, all marine waters. What is this error in bill?
That was originally part of the text that was supposed to be in the bill, and it wasn't. It was an error that was picked up. So all marine waters, including the deletion in square brackets, didn't appear in the bill itself, which should have. That was the error.
Now you're removing it.
Now we're just reflecting that deletion. It always was removed, but it wasn't. It didn't show up in the book.
So just a C means and then A, B, C.
Correct.
Anyway, it seems that you know what you're doing there, so let's just go ahead. That is definition C. The main point is that they have to check in the Act what the meaning is there, whether it fits in it. State land. This is a new definition.
Yes, Jeff, perhaps you want to deal with this when we deal with the reclamation provision, because that's where it becomes relevant. When we deal with the reclamation, the substantive clause
and
reclamation.
Have a look at it. Just for now, it's just what it is today. Waste assessment guidelines. Change it from Schedule 2. Are the law advisors here? Is that you?
Chair, I was just standing in for somebody else today earlier on.
Have you checked these amendments?
No, I haven't seen this first time. I've
and the person you're standing in for? Are they seen it?
Yes.
Have they? So they made their comments already?
Perhaps they're still coming. I need to confirm. I haven't sent anything.
We must do that because they usually come and make some amendments and stuff. We must make sure we include the whole lot at once. Because they usually come with technical stuff, you know, yes and that's left out. So we must do that in one go, okay? Or else we're going to get lost with all stuff. All right, the next one is to secure those two objects, D and DA. DA. DA, this is a new way of writing DA. D with a capital letter A. Small D and a capital A. All right, then it's a heading. Interpretation and conflicts. Okay, so yes, that's an important provision. Is that the right word? C space. I thought they had two words there. The C in the this I sent you, didn't I? The B part. The wording I sent you.
Yes. Sure.
But they had two words that they specifically wanted us to refer to. It's the this and the that, the channel and the... Yeah, I'm worried by using a word like C space is now completely something new. C has got a specific meaning in this act. So I'm worried about this word C space. I would rather use those two technical terms. It is this and that within the basin, you know, I don't know. Within this, within port or harbor, maybe that's what it is. But it's the channels and the, it's like the swings and the roundabouts, something like that. I know that's the bells and whistles. Something like that, okay? So what I've done here, you see I've added the B. Remember what they wanted. They wanted ownership. And then when we ask them questions, they say, but they want to make sure that they still can use the water. Because that's really what they're using, the water surface. And so remember they said to us there's two things they want to own as well. So we said you can't own the channels and the what. So I've used the word use, control and management. So it's not ownership. Is use mainly and control of it. So the provision of this act shall not affect the ownership of an immovable structure, part of an immovable structure, porter, da da da, referred to in section 7.2a. Now this is not going to be right. 7.2a. I thought we should have somewhere in this clause the provision of the next shall not affect the ownership or the use that existed prior to this act coming into operation. Somewhere. That what we want to clearly indicate. Because the problem, if you say the provisions of this act shall not affect the ownership and the control, then maybe whatever you're now saying is there is no ownership and control that's going to exist under this act, so maybe then the clause is meaningless. The control, use and management of sea space within a port or harbour referred to in 7A. Yeah, I think you need to do some more work on this prior to this act. There's two things. Work further on this, okay? We don't want greater interpretation clauses going to create more confusion.
Revise it and bring it back tomorrow.
Any further comment on this one? I think what we're trying to say is that the thing that they were worried about affects their asset, what they call their asset base. So we want to just make sure that we're not affecting any ownership or any use prior to the act coming into operation. So that has to be very clear prior to the act. It applies to both A and B. At least the A part is referred to in section 7.2A, whereas I don't think the use of that space is referred to anywhere. So that's why it makes it a bit more difficult. If you don't look at their input, you'll find the right wording there. We must write the exact technical wording. It's important. All right, then 6A, that's moved. So that actually should be square brackets. In your amended list here, you should put that in square brackets.
Check it. I think I'm misunderstanding this, and I just want to get clarity. These, we normally square bracket, and statutory advisors can help this technically fine. We use the square brackets for text that is currently in the Act. This was never in the Act.
Yeah, but this is in a bill before Parliament. So how are you going to reject the bill? Those clauses in the bill. How are you going to add to those?
It's exactly the
same principle. It's square brackets and underline.
Perhaps, Chair. I thought that we did that with versions, the A version, B version, C version.
No, the problem is this Act here is not an Act that's before Parliament. The bill is before Parliament. This act here is what you've done for the committee.
Yes.
You've made these inclusions in here, and you've made them as square brackets and things. But now there's a bill, and some parts of the bill we're not accepting. Like this clause is now deleted because it's going to be put somewhere else.
Yes.
So you have to delete it as a 6A. Okay. Or, if it's a clause that you've added here, well, it looks like you've added it as a 6A here, but we've made it a 7.
Sure.
So basically, in the or 7A or something. Now, basically, it's the number that changes. So somehow you need to reflect that correctly. Because ultimately, it's the bill we pass, not the act.
Yes.
So I don't care how you do it. There must just be, I mean, the law advisors.
Yeah, I'll go with them.
But I'm just saying now, for my purposes,
okay.
6A is in square brackets because we're deleting that.
Okay.
For me.
Yeah.
All right. So 7. 7. Everything is deleted and you've added 7.1, except that you've added subject to 2E. 2E, what's 2E? 2E is down there. Subject to 2E. Is that right? Subject to subsection 2E, notwithstanding the subsection 1, coastal property does not include any land or structure located within an admirably reserve that is subject to a long lease from the state. Two does not include E. Then in 1E we come and say, subject to 2E, any admiral Oh, it's an Admiralty Reserve, not as defined in E, 2E, which is one that is subject to a lawful lease on the state. But it could be a better way to answer.
Chair, Admiralty Reserve are big areas. Within them, there's some infrastructure that's currently being leased by DPW. These were amendments that were proposed as a result of discussions that happened with DPW because they have existing leases that they manage to get with the municipality. And if those are part of course the public property, creates a problem for their regime. So it's not the entire Admiralty Reserve that's excluded, only the portion that is subject to a lease. If we can drop that more...
What does that now mean? That means this Act doesn't apply to it?
It means that it applies to it, but it's not coastal public property, which means it doesn't belong to the citizens. If those areas are actually subject to local...
You say it's big areas. I mean, is that right that it doesn't belong to the citizens?
The area does. It's only the infrastructure that's on it that's subject to the lease that isn't part of coastal public property, because then you've got vested rights within those pockets. You've got a big, an Admiralty Reserve would be, I don't know how big they get, but if it's an area that's part of CPP, within that area you'll have certain pockets of buildings that are currently occupied and subject to leases. If we make those coastal public property, they then become the property of the citizens, and DPW and whoever's managing them has a problem.
Why do they have a problem that belongs to the citizens? They the state.
Chair, I understand if we take that over, we have to start managing leases on Admiralty Reserves as environmental affairs. It's all part of the coastal protection zone. Within the Act, it just doesn't have the status of coastal public property, but it has all the protections afforded in the previous.
But what does it mean? What is it that we can't do? That's the bottom line. What is it? I mean, you made an exception. It is to make sure that our laws don't apply to it, but what does that mean? What is it that they can then do with that land and that property?
They can continue leasing it at commercial rates.
But if it's removed from the definition of coastal property, there's nothing we can do. But they start doing things with that property that they shouldn't be doing,
then
how do we stop it?
Chair, they'd be subject to all the other laws that ICM imposes. They'll have to go through, if they want to develop on there, they have to do EIAs, they have to take into account Section 63, they would have to be part of the planning schemes, they would have to form part of the National Coastal Management Program. They still have accountability.
Where are you saying there's no difference between the definition of coastal public property and other property?
Coastal public property has a stricter regime, because you can't do anything on it, it belongs to the people. Whereas it's like the beach and the sea. All they've done is they've taken these Admiralty Reserves, which are these additional areas that are pockets that are along the beach, but they're partially developed. The idea in the white paper, I believe, was that if they make those Admiralty Reserves part of coastal public property, it assists in potentially creating a buffer zone if they take land next week, so that there's less development near the coast. But it was always understood that there's management that happens within these Admiralty Reserves. There's not environmental management, it's management by other organs of state. So if there are areas that we would still like a conservation status on that's not already developed upon, those are part of coastal public property. Coastal public property has the whole restriction on alienation, restriction on letting. But
where is DDGs? Where is often the border? These guys get the big bucks. Are we sure that this is what we are agreeing to? We've already told Transnet that we're not going to give them special relationships. Now you're creating a special relationship for another government structure. I'm trying to work out why we're differing amongst them. I don't agree with Transnet, but That's why I'm not easily agreeing to this. I don't understand what we're doing here. I haven't seen it before because no one raised it the first time I see it.
Chair, if I could, maybe I can come from, give a bit of history. They didn't ask for this exception. It was when we realized the extent of leases that exist within Admiralty Reserves and the fact that there's so many, some of them are managed by municipalities by agreement with DPW and they are vested rights there at the moment. If we do not exclude this from coastal public property, the Department of Environmental Affairs immediately becomes responsible for leasing those or continuing those leases that have been going on for years. And that was never the intention behind including Admiralty Reserves in coastal public property.
But that may be so, but have you dealt with it in the right way now? By completely removing it from... Shouldn't it rather be that there's a special regime created for those leases? I mean, you're getting rid of all other leases within a certain time frame. You're turning them into whatever it's called, licenses or whatever. So you've done that. Now, here, we don't go and create a regime that will be applicable to these, whatever it may be, that the leases will still be dealt with by the people that have the leases now. Whatever is separate, without actually removing it from coastal property. So it still has all its protections, but you allow a separate regime to apply to it. And so, I mean, that would be, for me, a more logical thing than to completely remove it from coastal public property and make it, it's coastal public property, but we now create a much weaker regime over which we have got no say whatsoever. We have just said it falls outside of it, and now that departments are going to deal with it. Now you're telling me those departments actually don't have the leases they made now, further leases with local governments and so on. So now there's a piece of coastal public property that we're creating, and we're just not creating any system for. We're leaving it to departments, you know, departments who've now got leases with someone else. If I were doing this, I would rather create a separate regime for Admiralty, whatever it's called, reserves, with leases on it, to say, you know, just like we're creating that use license that we're now creating for those leases, to create a regime, whatever regime it is. I mean, maybe you don't want to give the licenses, maybe local government doesn't want to give the licenses, but there should be a regime then. But all the issues that are applicable to coastal public property, I would like that to still be applicable. Wouldn't that be a better way of dealing with it, a safer way?
We can
what I'm saying is it's making sense. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I understand completely. I think it was just we looked at the extent of this and looked for the shortest possible.
Now, you've taken the shortcut to give you no work at all. But in the process, you're just leaving everything to these scabengus. You don't know what they're going to do with the stuff. And we've washed our hands of it. Now, rein the scabengus in. Rein them in.
Okay, we'll leave.
So I would rather say... I would take it out under 2E, then create a separate clause somewhere, maybe under leases, and then create whatever regime you want to there, and then you rather say, yeah, in 1E, you say subject to that clause, whatever it is, subject to that clause, any Admiralty Reserve owned by the state, then it's not under your removal, then you take it out completely there. Don't take shortcuts. That's the golden lesson here. And then you delete E. And then you're going to draft a separate wording under use. Separate clause under use. Under leases. Okay. That's the one. Then the rest of that, are we happy with it? This is the most important clause, so we have to be happy with it. 7.1, we'll have that change made, but no other changes made to it. 7.2, we've now redrafted the A part into ones and twos. And then instead of the things that we had previously, now we put an interpretation clause, how to read this clause. That interpretation clause, I, in my wording I sent you, I made it subject to something. I see you haven't made it subject to. Now, I don't think you should say the provisions. Just look at that. I said subject to, I think I said in my SMS to you, subject to environmental laws. Didn't I? Because you see, you don't, if you do something further now interpret the, in terms of the laws, it starts changing this. That should be fine. Well, just look at the subject to part of it, and then secondly, maybe we shouldn't say the provisions of this act. We should say specifically section 7, is it 7.1 and 2. I don't know why you would want to put the whole, all the provisions. What we worry about is the interpretation of 7. 7.1 and 7.2, aren't we?
Chair, I think that we just delete the provisions of and say notwithstanding subsection 1. It much over it.
I have to say, notwithstanding. I don't like putting it like that, and it's notwithstanding. I think it should be the provisions of section 7, 1 and 2 of this act shall not affect the ownership of an instructor part of the report relation referred to in section 2 or control use of the management data within a board prior to this act coming to operation. Yeah, I think that thing needs more working on it, okay? I don't think it works well if you say all the provisions. I think we must say specifically what it is. And then look at the subject too. Whether I may be wrong on that one, but I think we must think about it, whether it's needed or not. Okay. Okay, and then we come back, and then 7A. Of course, the all will move after C, then, and not after D, if you take away E. 7A is the old Now you've got the firstly what is coastal property, then you say what is the purpose of coastal property. Alright, that's just an exact wording from elsewhere. This is another way of dealing with it. 7A and 7B. That be B or A?
Previously it was A.
Oh, it becomes 7B because there's a 7A. Okay. What did you change here?
Everything. If you look at 7B, there was a lot of discussion we had around that. We had to go back, and I'm going to the table now. We had to go back and look at private reclamations versus government reclamations, insert different processes for them, and revise those clauses so that they didn't potentially conflict with each other.
But help me now. I mean, some of it stays the same.
Yes. Chair, you see, if I'm looking at the section the way it was a bit mixed up. We didn't know what was state land. We also spoke about the minister having to consider whether this was a private or for commercial gain and so forth. We've now revised it, and it's difficult to just have two sections because some stuff applies to both, and there's some restrictions that apply to commercial applications reclamation that wouldn't apply to government ones. So what we've done is in the first section, we've left some of those sections intact, that no person may reclaim land unless authorized by the minister. The second one is saying that the minister, that's subject to subsection 3, that the minister may on application approve reclamation and the authorization may be subject to any conditions or title deed restrictions that the minister may deem necessary. That was also previously there. Subsection 3 then says the minister may only approve an application for reclamation for commercial gain with the ratification of Parliament. Because we wanted to make a strict process, you'll see further on there's additional requirements. 4 says then an application for reclamation must be submitted to and determined by the minister prior to any application for an environmental authorization in terms of Chapter 5 of NEMA. Now this is something that has emerged, the department, and this we specifically bring to the committee as a logistical, practical step in the whole process relating to these applications. What happens often is you have a situation where developers commit to the entire EIA process and there's a whole expectation that they build up because they get a positive ROD on the EIA. And the EIA is looking at the environmental integrity, the science, and the impact, but from a different perspective to the reclamation application. They then get a positive decision on the EIA, and then they come to the minister for with an application to reclaim the land. Because reclamation is a listed activity, but it's also a process that needs the minister's authorization in terms of this act, so that we can see what they want to do with it.
So now before the minister may allow reclamation, before they do an EIA, they must first get approval for reclamation.
For reclamation. So that they can't say, listen,
that's
invested all the money.
That's an additional step you've added now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's a new thing. If you look at 5, it then talks to that new step. It's an approval for reclamation. It's subject to a final decision on an environmental authorization in terms of Chapter 5. So in other words, if the minister...
Correctly worded.
Well, we tried
it's
very many
different...
subject
to
ones.
A final decision. Shouldn't it be approval?
Approval, yes.
I mean...
No, it could
because
be...
If it's negative...
No,
that means that even if it's negative, they can still have it.
No, it's saying it's subject to. In other words, that decision takes precedence.
Yes, but it says to a final decision.
It's subject to a final decision.
Yeah. Or that it is subject to a decision. Once a decision is made, the decision says, no, this is a terrible idea, then according to this wording, you'll be able to go ahead.
No.
But all you say is subject to a final decision.
On an environmental order.
Yes, on an environmental order.
It's saying the opposite. It's saying the opposite. It's saying that an approval, if we approve, or maybe that we need to pick a wording. Let me give you a principle. The principle is, if the minister said it's okay, we're happy with what you're going to do with it, subject to an EIA, and the EIA comes back and says no, that means this approval falls away.
Yeah, but that's my problem. You're not saying that yet. You're saying an approval for reclamation is subject to a final decision. You're not saying which way the decision has to go. You're just saying a final decision. Say that if a decision, there's a final decision that says this is a terrible idea. So, I mean, you must say where there's been approval of an, I don't know what word you use, but that the EIA is positive. It must have been subject to a final decision. A final decision can be that this is the worst idea we've ever heard of. Then all that the law says, as long as there's a final decision, doesn't matter what that decision is. You can still go ahead. So you must word that differently. Whatever word you use for a positive environmental order, in other words, it won't damage the environment. Whatever wording that is, that's the wording you must use, not final decision.
I think we'll just reword it. It's just all that it is is a rewording. Yeah.
What I'm saying now, you hear saying an approval of reclamation is subject to a final decision. Not saying how that decision has to go.
Yeah.
You must actually say it must be a positive EIA or whatever the word is.
We'll fix that up.
Yeah. A reclamation application to the limited state infrastructure must be accompanied by that.
Yeah.
Chair, isn't the principle that the approval by the minister enables the applicant to enter into an EIA process only.
I think they would have it the other way around.
Yes, but I think the intent is that the approval enables the or triggers the EIA process, which would then go through the normal development cycle.
You know, I would have thought that part of allowing a reclamation will be what it does the EIA say. I would have thought that the EIA should have definitely been done before you make a decision to reclaim.
Well, the EIA is determining the environmental integrity and what alternatives and what mitigation measures would need to be put in place if such an activity went ahead. But what I heard from Radio is that the idea here is there are other considerations other than just environmental integrity considerations, which are EIA, which is the focus of the EIA. So it's more strategic, and whether it fits into the bigger planning scheme and so on and so forth. And my understanding was that the intent of this prior approval, if you want, was to say, okay, it ticks all those other boxes, which are not EIA boxes, and we could then authorize the proceeding of an EIA process.
I must say, that thing looks very dangerous to me to do it that way around. Because the problem is you kind of, if once you said you're approving an application where the wording is, application must be submitted to and determined prior to. Yeah. An application for reclamation must be submitted, which is fine, and determined by the minister prior to any application for environmental authorization. So what that means is minister will be deciding an application for reclamation in the absence of an EIA. That's what it means. See, the full authority as well.
Yeah, I just think that it's about authorizing the proceeding, the applicants to proceed with the application. That's what this is about.
Chair, maybe if I could just shed light on this, the thinking around this was if the minister on the other issue around reclamation says, no, I'm not happy with what you want to do with this, I'm not going to allow this reclamation, it stops just there. And that's what I understand Alf to be saying, and I agree with him, is that when the minister says, yes, I understand that environmental integrity must happen, that test for environmental integrity must happen, but I'm going to look at it from this perspective. What are you going to do with this? What are your future plans with this? Is it going to be used for legitimate purposes that's going to benefit the country, et cetera, et cetera? Then we see, it's no use going through the EIA process because it's going to be a waste of resources and time, and we stop it just there. But if I think, okay, on this level it's okay, I will say, but what I say at the end of the day will still only be influenced by whether the environmental integrity is sound. And if they say after that process it's okay, then that's fine, you can go ahead. That was the thinking.
I understand where it's all coming from, but if the minister is the key authority as well, I think something's not right. I think we need to re-look at it altogether. Because you cannot, from the beginning to the end, be the sole person that has the decision-making power for the whole thing.
I hear what you're saying, Advocate. I would rather find wording for that to say, call it a pre-approval process. Something like that. I mean, I would only use that kind of wording. So, because you see, when you say an application is determined by the minister, then you say, but before there's an EIA, I mean, the message that sends out is just the wrong one. So, I mean, maybe you should create a pre-approval, and part of the pre-approval, if it's a commercial game one, then Parliament's permission has to be there. So maybe what you must do is create a whole pre-approval kind of process that takes place and procedures. I think, you know, this parliamentary thing about the commercial the base for commercial gain. You know, I think for me the most important stuff is not all that information, but it's the money. And where is the money going to come from? And that's more important for me. And where is it going to go? Where is the profits going to go? So I think the whole financial side of the stuff needs to be spelled out. Because, I mean, what are we trying to stop? Part of why we say Parliament must play a role, because it's a bit unusual for Parliament to play a role in this. But because it's really impacting on the environment, number one, and the potential for corruption is big, that's the two reasons. So, I think there's a lot of improvement here. But I think we need to think this thing more. I think what we must do is, I think the senior people must sit down in the department and work out what we want to do with this reclamation. And come up with a proposal. Because as I say, I can see the value of a pre-approval, and then all that stuff has to be worded correctly, and we can get it right. You know, for example, why would one want to come to Parliament if you haven't got an EIA yet, and an EIA might come along and say, but this is a very bad idea. So then you've got Parliament's approval, but you haven't got all the facts before. For example, you haven't got an EIA. I mean, you know, Parliament, I mean, if the department wants to, if there's an EIA which says, no, this is really going to, it's going to mess up our post and da-da-da-da-da, and this is what's going to happen and so on, and you're going to have oil spills and you're going to have all this kind of stuff. Now, that information, particularly with a commercial gain, if it's for the people, you can still say, okay, well, at least the state's benefiting, the people are benefiting. But when it's for commercial gain, you would hate there to be shortcuts and things. And then, I mean, before a commercial thing has to go ahead, I mean, you would want to have that information. So I think we must think through how we want to do this. Is the EIO the only thing we want to look at? I don't know. I mean, that may be so, but maybe not. I mean, maybe there are other things as well we have to look at. Yes, no, I've looked at that already. But you see, all that does is tells you what the application must contain. So that's just what the document must contain that is being submitted. But that doesn't tell us what are the principles and the things that apply here. So I think, as I said, I think you guys have done some thinking on it, but I think some more thinking has to go into this reclamation, okay?
Jackson, I think that clarity, if we have because I like the idea of the pre-approval process, if we put the pre-approval process but the ratification of Parliament at the end, do you think that would work? And I say this because currently, under the Seashore Act, all leases come to Parliament, all leases of sea space come to Parliament first. That's the current practice when it comes to coastal public property as we know it now under this Act. So I would like to still see that there when it comes to commercial enterprises, but if we...
Look, I think you must, that's why I want you to go and think through the procedure. But what I'm saying is, it will be very difficult for Parliament to make a decision if there's information outstanding. I mean, if an EIA is still outstanding, I mean, that may be a reason why it should never even come to Parliament. So you shouldn't even reach that stage. So, you know, I think we need to think through this thing. Remember what we said about commercial gain, eh? We said it should be an extraordinary, extraordinary procedure. So maybe what you should do is deal with reclamation, but only with the state. And then deal completely separately with the commercial, and then make it that it's, and dead wording like it's only in the most extraordinary circumstances that it should be allowed. Because, I mean, you know, I just don't like the idea that there's a possibility of permission being gained to create islands off our coast. And those islands are going to have casinos on them. Only casinos that can pay for it. Nothing else. No other developer will pay for it. What will developers, what will they get out of it? To go and build an island. So, you know, I think we must think through how we want to do reclamation. First, I think at the state kind of level. That's easy. And then I think you guys must then think what do we do if it's commercial and have maybe a separate thing how we deal with it. The problem is why we're struggling now is because we're trying to make space for this commercial. You see, previously you guys just were vague. and it was a huge problem. Now we're giving detail to it, but as we give more detail, it also becomes a problem. Why does it become a problem? Because we don't like reclamation for commercial gain. So you want to tie it down all the time. Ah, my gut killing it is. Don't have it.
Shouldn't we just say in the Act that reclamation will only be done for public good purposes? Or do you want to make a space for commercial?
No, you can put all those words there, but then it means we have to scrap commercial completely.
Or
I'm happy for that.
I mean, I'm not a coastal scientist, but it seems to me that with sea level rise and storm surges and all that, basically there's a potential that should reclamation happen, next storm surge comes along and the owner of that then comes to the state to say, please fix the erosion which has taken place on my reclaimed land. You know, so it creates a liability for the state. So I know that there's a small section of our coastline which is prograding, and maybe we can restrict for commercial gain along the prograding coastline. But all of that coastline is a marine protected area, the prograding one. It's all the St. Lucia. The rest of the coast is retrograding. So I don't know.
The other way to do it, of course, I haven't thought through it yet. But the other way to do it is to only apply it to the state, and then to have a clause that says if there is any application for commercial use of that reclamation, that must start with a pre-approval in Parliament. So you kick it off with a...
Basically, the VNA waterfront is on reclaimed land, which was reclaimed years ago because they wanted to expand the Cape Town harbour, the port. So
that's not a problem because the land is already reclaimed. This reclamation we're talking is now, from now on onwards, if you want to reclaim land and then do something on it. Wasn't the V&A water one, wasn't that part of the Transnet problem? Didn't they give the land away when they shouldn't have? Yeah, that's good.
And now, because now the state is picking up liability or costs in terms of maintenance of the harbour facility for commercial gain, supporting. Anyway, I'm just.
That cost coming to us?
Yeah, the port is maintained by Portnet, and even though they've sold.
A reclamation like that, which is part of a harbour or port, then it comes from the magic. Yeah, draft this stuff on the public stuff and think about the commercial stuff, what you want to do. I think you can't just sneak it through like this with very minimum. It's tests, it's procedures, everything has to be much more severe. And there has to be public participation in that process. I can't see that we can just let somebody casino come along and treat us like an Indian reserve and get permission basically to rape the public. Okay, give it more thought. I don't think we're there yet, okay? I think on the state stuff we close because the state stuff we find we... I do though think with state stuff that prior to the approval, I think the approval must be in the Government Gazette, and prior to that approval it must be tabled in Parliament. Even the public reclamation I'm talking now. Because this is a really big step and I think there should be some transparency in the process. Okay? All right, what's the time? Huh? 20 to what? Oh, only. Oh, we've got a whole day still. We can finish this bill here. Number 8. No further changes. Ten. What is 10?
please rewording it.
Oh, have you guys now removed it? Okay. Did you ever find out the question we were asking? Or that you were asking yourself, what does this add to 8?
We didn't have enough people around
in
the
development of the last paper. Is it not even up? He's so ancient, he should have been, huh? There's one old white man in the department that's around, so why? So we still don't know why. And so because you don't know why, you're just going to delete it.
Well, there were some ideas about us, we got some information that they were thought about using for beneficiation projects and the like, but it was never really properly put out or put in any meaningful way in the act.
Hey, what is it? I thought we deleted it. Did you do it quietly or not telling me? You let me read it so I find it, and now I find out that you're cheating me.
I'm speaking about understanding.
Hey, advocate, just think how you can cheat me all day. You know the case that... I suppose the advantage of 10, I know it's the same, you also need concurrence. No, okay, so they're going to delete 10. It really doesn't look like it's, we can't work out if it's got any different meaning than 8 then. 8 is a more simple procedure. 11, okay, here amendments within amendments. What's this? So we've gone to recommendation. Eleven. 3. No person may exploit a claim of right to exploit any marine resource in any part derived from coastal land unless that person is willing to do so by national instance.
If I can remind you, Western Cape had an issue and they spoke about it shouldn't be national legislation, it should be relevant legislation. And you asked us to go back to them and ask them what legislation they were referring to. They didn't give us specifics, but it seems to be that they also had the problem with the term, if you talk about use or exploit, then you're dealing with a whole suite of other activities that may be regulated by local government, bylaws, etc. And that was never the intention with the section. It was really just to deal with ownership of exploited resources like minerals and fish, etc. So we thought to make that clearer.
Just take out the use.
To take out the use part of it.
And you add a definition for marine resources.
Cross-reference to the Constitution because that way it makes it an exclusively national competence.
Mm-hmm. That's a bad reference.
I know
the problem is by referring to the Constitution, that's got no meaning there yet. I mean, meaning is usually given to that term in legislation. So I think you must go and find where that is used in legislation. Like, for example, the act we've just done, the protected areas. Because to say it's in the Constitution, advocate shortcut. I'm going to call you advocate Raja shortcut.
I must try something. Sometimes I'll get it right. Okay, Chair, I agree. Completely right. This was bad attempt at a shortcut, but the idea is, I think even if we don't put this definition in, we're talking about exploitation.
Well, this is not really a definition, you see, it's just a reference to a power in the Constitution, more than a power than a reference. So that's not going to help anyone when they read it, because they want to know what can't I exploit. So you say, go and read the Act Constitution. They say, I've read it, but it doesn't mean anything. Okay.
But this issue, wouldn't this issue be covered by all this other legislation we did on mining? Or is exploitation but a wider word meaning than mining?
Chair, perhaps what we can do is we can make a find a definition for marine resources so that we know exactly what we're talking about and cross-reference it to the specific legislation.
So unless it's marine resources as in fishes and plants.
There's fish, there's the mining stuff.
So is it mining as well?
Yes, it's mining as well. Because if they had a right to mine, and it's not in an MPA, and they extract those resources, the FERGA says they're entitled to do that.
See, then this clause worries me because it's one sentence to regulate a complete prospering, what is all the words they use, prospecting, mining, just as far as mining goes, and then there's the biodiversity side of it. So I would have imagined if we're including mining here, there should be a whole section on mining, not just a one sentence. Unless we say here somewhere, marine resources will only mean fishes and animals and so on. As far as minerals are concerned, that will be governed by the what Act.
Yeah, what this section is actually saying, that's why we kept it broad in the first instance. It's actually saying you may not exploit or claim a right to use exploit unless another statute tells you you can. Because it goes to the, it's really going to the ownership of, because social public
policy. You see, the claim of the right is after the whole. So it says exploit.
Or claim a right. To exploit.
Now, the exploit part is worries me. That's the part. Because that exploit, if it includes mining, it includes fishing, plants, all that stuff. Then to have one sentence that says you can't do that without national authorization means absolutely sweet money blow. You know what I'm saying? What it just tells you is you must get the authorization actually. Doesn't that all explain to you how do you do
it? That legislation is there to do that.
But then you must refer it back to that.
So you're saying
because here it looks like the authority is going to be in terms of national legislation, which, you know, you don't have to say that. If you want to say, then rather just say, as far as the plants and the fishes are concerned, it will be done under the cover of our Act.
And if we miss out?
If you miss out one
of those, then you miss out, because you say national legislation.
Yeah, but
then it says Biden, all the
national. But Mr. Butter, that sentence stands there. What does it help us? What does it help us? He says no person may exploit or claim unless you are authorized by national legislation. If we can't then say what is all national legislation that you will apply under, then it's not worth having. Because by implication, if it's mining, that mining is dealt with elsewhere, so you don't have to mention it here, it's dealt with elsewhere. If the fishes are here, then you don't have to mention it, it's dealt with elsewhere. So this clause in that sense then becomes completely useless. So we must see what it is we want to do here. See why we start off with. We start off with ownership is the heading. Now we have exploiting and using. Using is now taken out. It's a far cry from ownership.
We actually had this particular clause somewhere else in the bill. And then during the comment process, people were urging it to be moved to under the ownership, and I think that's how it found its way here. But this has been in the Act, I think, under one of the other sections. And I don't know that, Chester, are you suggesting that we must list the legislation or not say anything at all?
No, look, what is the clause trying to deal with? It's trying to tell you who's the ownership of coastal public road. That's what the clause is trying to challenge. So it says the ownership will be in the people.
Yeah.
Okay, yep, if we own. The next clause says coastal property is inalienable and cannot be sold, attached, or acquired by description and rights over it and cannot be acquired by description. Now I think those two sentences make it absolutely abundantly clear that where the ownership rests and what can't be done. Now you put in the next clause, you don't say no person may use or exploit or claim or rather use or exploit any marine resource in any part of that is arrived. Now immediately it starts undoing the first two clauses. Because they're now telling you, no, it's not inalienable. So what I'm saying is, the next part, once you start wanting to say other things there, you must say exactly what it is we're saying.
Otherwise you
because we're now creating huge confusion. If you say the ocean vessel of the citizens is inalienable, and now you start saying, but now you can exploit it, you can use it, da 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 da. So, look, the use of this is clearly in terms of this act. And that's what it is. So, I mean, whatever, you, having taken those leases and turned them into use permits, that's the use we're talking about.
Yes.
So use is clearly...
It's covered.
It's covered in the, as the rest of the act. If it's mining we have to do, then any of it be surely in the Mining Act.
Which is why we try to say that here. We're not trying to exclude
those. Yeah, I mean, all that you're doing by doing it like this is you're undermining the first two clauses. Because you say it's inalienable, it can't be sold, it can't be attended, it can't be acquired.
It's the exception that we're putting in here, and perhaps it shouldn't be placed here to begin with. I mean,
if it's exceptions, if you want to create exceptions, then there must be absolutely clear what the exceptions are.
Chair, what are your thoughts about moving this exception to the composition clause of the clause dealing with the composition of clause of public property as a 7-2?
No, look, I mean, the problem is you must do nothing to undermine 1 and 2. Ownership of coastal public property is what we're talking about. If there are different things that we want to deal with, if you want to make it clear and you want to say that any kind of mining and da-da-da, you use the word you want to use, then that must be dealt with exclusively under the whatever act. If you want to deal with the exploitation of fishing, it must be dealt with under that act. If you want to spell it out here, then we spell it out like that rather somewhere, then putting a general clause to say in terms of legislation.
But are you happy with
me
saying here it
was 35? I'm not well enough acquainted with this act. I mean, we haven't picked this up before. Every time I look at something, it looks... But here I know. I don't know, we've just added this. Looks like we've added subsection 3 and 2. And there was only subsection 1 previously. Looks like that was what the act originally said. Now we seem to are finding reasons to keep on adding to the ownership.
Okay, the difference is that the first two clauses they are talking about ownership, and I think I must agree with Raja, it might be more useful to move it to 7 or 107 because then the flow is correct in terms of the ownership. In terms of clause 3 and 4, it relates to not ownership of the land but the use of the specific resource in the coastal public property, the way I understand it. So that's a, as you say, a different aspect. So I think the ownership would be more suited under clause 7, the first two clauses. And then maybe we just need to find or create another clause for the use of the marine resource within the coastal public property. And then make reference to whatever potential uses there can be. And the national interest in relation to it. So we are 100% that we can specify exactly that we can think what the option is. I think maybe even a definition of marine resource may be able to...
But I can never pass an act. I mean, you say you don't fully agree, but I can never pass an act that says a person is authorized to do something does the national legislation and leave it like this. Meaningless. I mean, why am I not passing? So I don't care where you guys do it. If you think there's a necessity to spell out what can be done with coastal land, then find a way of doing it. I don't care how well you do it. But then you must be clear about it. I mean, someone must read this act and say, if I want to look at what public coastal property means, then I must be able to see the use is in terms of section so-and-so of this act, is use of the public property. The exploitation of minerals within coastal public property must be in terms of something. And the I don't know what you call it, I mean this word exploit is also a terrible word, but the use or whatever it is of fishing resources and so on, surely is in terms of fisheries legislation. The use of plants is surely in terms of the biodiversity. Whatever it is, we need to spell it all in the field. But once you start doing it like this, it actually just helps no one. Okay?
So I think you guys need to give us guidance on this.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Perhaps I agree that perhaps this needs to be separated from ownership. This is talking about the use. I'm not a lawyer, but I think that in the MPRDA they issue mining rights, and I don't know what the difference is legally between right and a use permit or authorization. But you need to cover that. And I would have thought that because of 11, which is inalienable, that we should be saying something like, notwithstanding the provision of any other legislation, it must meet the provisions of this Act. So, you know, it's changed it around.
What happens in terms of mining in what's called public coastal property? I mean, who authorizes mining in public coastal?
The Minister of Mineral Resources, you see.
This state belongs to the people, and we've now told Transnet they can't own it.
Yeah.
So how do we give the rights to...
Yeah, exactly. This is the problem, and this is why I think that there is a definite need for this Act to be very clear on the use of these coast property and marine resources. I think they're two separate things now. In terms of this definition anyway.
Is there any kind of, like, you need a water license, you need a environment, EIA, and so is there any requirements for mining and coastal public property?
Yeah, they need the EIA, and the EIA has got to satisfy, in addition to the criteria set up, a whole another 63 criteria in addition, in the EIA. In this act. So all I'm saying is, isn't it logical if it says shouldn't we have a provision which says notwithstanding the provisions of any other act, the provisions within coastal property and for marine resources, the provisions of this act apply? You know, maybe turn the logic around somewhat, rather than making it an exception, as it's framed here.
Clause 11 is not true in the strictest sense of the word. It can be alienated. Say that all is that's needed for coastal mining is an EIA, and what is 36? What?
Section
63. On the Act, additional factors to be considered. 63. 63. When an environmental organization tells the chapter of the National Institute for Coastal Activity to come, all reasons of fact, including. So it's that up to H. K. So K. Yeah, it goes on to K. But this is just called coastal activities.
They're listed like that in the EIA regulations.
What's listed? Does it say mining somewhere? But this just says the competent authority must take into account. So it must take it into account, it doesn't have to do more than that. So it's nothing really. This is quite, I mean, the Minister of Minerals will only have to take that into account. I mean, they don't have to agree with it, they don't have to do anything, just take it into account. So really what they need is just an EIA. And how does the sensitive areas thing come into this, or doesn't it?
Well, the provision
sensitive areas on their higher criteria, higher than just an EIA. I thought a sensitive area you'd be able to block mining and complete. So this will only be in areas that. I don't think there's a good link between these two. See, I think it must be clear. I mean, it must be clear for everyone. I mean, if I have a little bit of legal training and if I'm struggling to even basically understand this, then, I mean, God forbid the other folks. So, you know, maybe we'll have to look at the thing a bit more carefully. I'm actually starting to lean towards something which is absurd but maybe useful, and that is to say, any use of coastal public property is dealt with in terms of Section 7 of this Act. Any mining activity is da-da-da-da-da-da. But we're quite clear that what applies to coastal public property. If you don't have that, you have to be some kind of genius to know all the other environmental laws that exist and are going to be applicable. And what that worries me, particularly with mining, Isis Mangalita springs to mind, where you wanted to destroy completely the titanium in those sand dunes. You get decisions like that, you can't go back on them. And this is the one place where we said coastal public property is inalienable. Now, I understand the issue of mineral rights. It's not anymore. You don't own the land. You own the right to exploit. Have we ever dealt with trade norms and standards and things for coastal mining, for sea mining? Is there anything like that? So it's all good and well. The question I'm asking is this. It's all good and well to say that minerals will be the competent authority within the framework of environmental law. But if environmental law doesn't exist, then that's a hollow thing. Because, I mean, I can't remember where I've seen where we've created norms and standards and rules and so on for sea mining, for example. If we don't have that, then it means there is no environmental law, so you'll be giving mine rights within a vacuum. I mean, are we doing something about it? We're going to create rules and so on. Someone else said something here? My members? Something? So, firstly, who are you? Demo. Okay, now lovely. Then you're allowed. You're allowed here. You're allowed to talk. Demo, help me?
I think this is an area chair who might have a look at. Currently, we're using standards for oil and gas.
For the what? Mine and gas? Oil and gas?
It's an area on the environment side we might have to look at how to bring it to the integration process as well and what.
I'm thinking, for example, phosphate mining. You know, they go in the sea and they take big chunks of earth out of the sea and then they mine it. Diamond mining. We just completely destroy the... Just take a big pipe and you suck all the sand up and everything in it. It does seem to me that this is a bit of a problem area now that we're talking about it. Alright, well, look, you guys must think of how you're linking this. But people must be clear that once you've looked at this act and coastal, we've got a definition of coastal public property is inalienable. Because then you'll have to have a clause here to say that that as far as prospecting and use and so on is concerned, it is governed in terms of whatever. Otherwise, clause 11 becomes very either meaningless or it becomes very useless. Okay. So they'll give some thinking to
that, and then as a separate resolution,
I listen, advocate. The way I deal with things here, we pass a bill, but sometimes we also pass a resolution with it, and usually the resolution explains issues we couldn't finalize in the legislation. So part of that resolution must be this whole discussion around coastal mining. That during our deliberations we found that there's probably not much, there's only these things that are being applied. So the gentleman from DMR said they, for example, use the guidelines on oil and gas, but that there is no environmental framework in which the exploitation of mineral resources in the form of mining is... So you write a whole little story about that, and that clearly deal with, after consultation, I would imagine, after consultation with DMR, should immediately embark on a process by creating the applicable environmental laws, regulations, guidelines, whatever is necessary for this, okay? And then on our issue that we've discussed originally, you guys will go and see what best way to, how best link ICM to mining, exploitation, well, use is relatively easy, use is the outlets. Okay. So that whole thing you guys got, that is called exploitation of mineral resources, okay? Okay, so then we'll have to come back to... Huh? Exploit's a terrible word, that's where the problem starts. But I think the issue is bigger than just exploit. Exploit is a catch-all, but then the clause also is a catch-all, so everything becomes
two kinds of use. There's the use of a renewable resource, and there's the use of a non-renewable resource. And I don't know, I just think that, I think exploit is now something different. So I think that you can keep the word use as long as you understand that you're using resources, some of which may be renewable, like living resources, they could grow or whatever, but others like oil and gas cannot be renewed. It's the use of a non-renewable resource.
Well, this is another area where clearly you guys will give some thought to. Okay. You must sit down with your senior management and think through this, how we're going to deal with this. And then, of course, the separate issue is the resolution, okay? So I'm making a big year resolution. Lack of environmental laws, re-mining in sea and on coast. You know, sand, for example. Dunes, the exploitation use of dunes. You change the ecosystem completely by removing the dunes, or, you know, messing them up, there's nothing to be done with it. I mean, one of the ugliest places in the world is when you drive between Richards Bay by air, Richards Bay and St. Lucia, and you look at those ugly plantations, those mines that planted the ugliest trees in the world. I mean, thorn trees are prettier than those trees. Thorn trees. Oh, dear, they're so ugly. And that is, what is that? That is the Department of Environment's rehabilitation program. We told them to do, or maybe it's DMR actually. DMR, you see, that's why you need to understand which trees we must use. But it's really ugly. I don't know if you've ever flown there. They take those dunes, they clean them out of the titanium. Then they're like, the dunes have been destroyed. Then they plant those ugly trees. That's not rehabilitation. That's just ugly. So these are the kind of things we need to deal with carefully. Because we must find that balance. You see, the problem, if you say to people, I mean, we now find resistance in that area for this new scheme, the new mining they're trying to start there. I mean, the Kenya organizations, I don't remember how many of them, Kenya, and complain to us and say, you know what they're doing to us there. So that kind of balance we need. Get it properly, okay? State public trustee, okay. Then the next one is section 13. There's a green here. Subject to 2 and 3, no person may prevent access to coastal public property. Yeah. I hope there's a sanction for that. Independent. Okay. Then, still 13. Still 13. What are these amendments? Access fee, okay. Access fee. Access fee. Port. Okay, those are they just consequential amendments. Those are consequential amendments to section 13. Everyone happy? 14. what's the changes here? That is the professor's suggestions, are they? All right, we did look through that and we agreed to it. Remember, she was trying to use landmark and windmark and whatever else, some mark. Everyone happy with that? 16. Delete whole or subsection. What else subsection?
Chair, that was a specific request from the committee. It dealt with accretion.
Yes. No, we don't want that anymore. I mean, that doctor also said it's not necessary. That's the one where you get land back that we don't spend. No, that's fine. I think we agree that must come out. Because if we put that clause in, we're taking on huge responsibilities for the state. 15. What is this one?
We had to make this more specific. It's about the construction, maintenance, extending structures, etc., to prevent or promote accretion or erosion. Previously said except as provided for in this act, but the truth is that NEMA and the FEMAs also deal with these kind of activities, and we have to add that in.
Okay. Then composition. There's some green here.
That was just clarifying wording so that it made more sense. So the part of river that was situated within a land unit had to be properly ascribed, so that you didn't inadvertently include a river that went kilometers up past the coastal protection zone.
We've taken rivers separately.
If you see F.
So F is now up to dam.
Because
you've taken the river part out of it.
Yes.
And you just made it a separate thing.
Yes.
So it's the same clause, it's just broken in two.
It's just broken in two.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? No further changes. 18. 18 is green, yeah.
That was as a result of the comments from the province, from the Eastern Cape, and a few of the survey generals. We've improved the wording by taking out that in favor of a local municipality, you don't want public access servitude. The issue was that if a municipality designates an access servitude on its own land, it cannot be in favor of the municipality because it's its own land. It's really just a public access servitude. So those words were more confusing, and most of the technical experts that deal with the servitudes were objecting to it. We've been discussing it with the committee, and the idea was that we would remove those and just clarify the wording.
Land is designated in terms of one, then it's automatically subject to public servitude. But does it work like that in practice? automatically.
There's similar legislation in this transport legislation that also creates this kind of power, so it's not unusual.
Yeah, but usually a servitude for me is usually something that is registered in the deed office. So I'm wondering when you use the word automatically subject to public servitude. That maybe creates a legal situation or the kind of factual situation, but does that create the legal situation?
We made references to the Deeds Registries Act that provides for the creation of servitudes by operation of law. Specifically empowers the kind of provision.
Where do we is that?
It's in the Deeds Registries Act. I can bring that. We'll bring that through tomorrow for you, Chair.
Which says what?
That a public servitude may be created by operation of law, so that you don't have to go through those other processes. It recognizes it. It recognizes this kind of creation of servitude.
But is there a recording of it?
It can become registered afterwards, Chair, but there's no obligation to do that.
Okay. Just bring that law and check, please.
Well done.
Deeds Act. Uh-huh. Yeah. So is this a consequential amendment? And there is nothing until 25. 25 is green.
Chair, that was as a result of comment coming from KZN. When the MEC establishes these what used to be called setback lines and now called coastal management lines, if they're removable property and vacant land that through which such a line is going to go, the MEC needs to obviously be aware of that and not create a line right through somebody's property, because that would not make sense. So we thought putting this in general terms and saying that the MEC must consider the location of these things when establishing and determining these coastal management lines, so that it doesn't create an anomalous situation.
Chair,
that was to deal, this is also as a result of public comments, where we need to consider, when determining and adjusting boundaries, you look at anthropogenic, which is human-induced influences on coastal processes when you are deciding to adjust boundaries of coastal public property. It's one of the criteria that wasn't there before. It was a good suggestion we thought was worth incorporating.
31. It's just local. Those are all just
consequential.
33.
The first one in subsection 2, the first green was just a correction. Prescribing meant prescribed by regulation. The HR management protocol is not a regulation, so we changed to publish by no limit of debt. And the second green, which is at the end of subsection 1, was the accountability provision that actually was raised by the committee, and we brought it before the committee as an attempt to address some kind of accountability of by the authorities identified in these SRI management plans. So there's reporting mechanisms and as well as requesting for tailing in Parliament of these reports. Because the challenge that we had was enforcement against other identified authorities within plan, that they were actually going to do what they're supposed to do in the plan is not enforceable, except if there's some kind of accountability mechanism. This was the attempt to do so.
wonder, can 6 be right? C be right? Because the responsible body contemplated that responsible body could, for example, be a municipality. And would it be right if we say ensure that the relevant legislation is enacted?
They do bylaws. They have the power to establish bylaws, and legislation is including bylaws.
Maybe you might make it clear and say, if applicable, comma, ensure. And they submit an annual report to the Minister on the presentation of the Ministry of Matter and the legislation. That sentence to me doesn't look too clear. It's clear up to issuing plan. But I'm not sure what the legislation and other matters are prescribed means. Submitting a report to the Minister on the implementation of the Extreme Management Plan. Doesn't it stop there?
I think that would cover it, actually, Chair. We just wanted to have a belt and braces approach, and sometimes that doesn't work so well. Just in case there was anything else.
I mean, look, the C part is to say you must make sure there is legislation to cover it.
Yeah.
Now, once that legislation is there, then that is all part, surely, of the history.
I think you're right, Chair. The implementation of the plan is actually the essence of what needs to be reported upon.
Report referred to one team of the table of power. Before when? And as it stands there now, they can do it in 10 years' time.
And what is implied, but maybe we can make it clear there.
Well, we'll check whatever. I don't know what your requirements are, how regularly this does report to the Minister, but just adapt it accordingly. Institutional arrangements.
This is the National Protocol Committee, Chair.
But you haven't got what the original clause was. Have you got it, Sylvia?
Yeah, it bracketed the stuff that's taken out of the bracket.
Bracketed in what color?
It's all gray because this, Chair, if you look here, the bracket is what removed and what's underlined is what's added. That goes on to
you just made it shorter there. Okay, let's stand chapter, what is the time now? That's 4. Let's stand chapter 5 over, we'll come back to that. There's quite detail we have to go in there. Chapter 6. There's nothing until section 51. There's no changes there. There's a change in 56, also consequential. 59, we added MEC there. Fifty-nine, sixty-two. 63, there's lots of consequential amendments, a lot of amendments here. 64, consequential. 65, there's an amendment. This is the use term, use permit. Subject to section 66.
There's an indirect cross reference.
We put back 20 years. Did we keep the renewal?
The renewal was under exactly from the situation.
But yet also a renewal, I see. I'm just trying to think why we're saying, what did we have there for, we put 20 years?
We had no time period.
Had no time period, but we said it might be renewed once.
I think this just came after we added the time period into green. Yeah, it's like we never particularly dealt with this one. So if we need to revisit the renewal, then
no, just look. It seems funny to me. Yeah. It said must be awarded for a fixed period of 20 years, but may be renewed once, whereafter a new application must be made. This sounds odd.
This was modeled around the other provisions that we had, similar to dumping provisions. I'm not sure where they found the origin, but...
You're saying that they can make a new application?
Oh, this actually came from the Western Cape, I think.
So what is the effect of a renewal? Is they way after a new application has been made?
Chair, my understanding of that...
What is the difference between a new application
and a renewal? I've asked that question several times and I actually didn't get a satisfactory answer, so I'm kind of accepting that there must be something I don't understand about it. I know with regard to the dumping permits, it's quite clear. It's about sediment testing and that kind of thing, and if nothing's changed, we can renew it in the same terms and conditions. But with regard to the coastal use permits, there may be instances where there's no impact, or they can show that what they're doing is still having the same effect, and you may want to then say, fine, we can do this, and if not, if you're changing the terms and conditions of your use, then we want to look at it as a new application. That, I think, was the thinking behind it. But we're not married to a chair.
I mean, surely some permits are short permits. Some permits like fishing permits. That's a use permit. I mean, if you want to take up 5 crayfish, those are just like recreational permits you take up. Imagine this, the 20-year, I mean, surely longer ones that are the use of property and so on. So now we've created a funny kettle of floors for very short little permits and for long permits.
Chair, I just want to give the line function technical person a chance to address this, because I think they probably do a better job than I would.
Thank you, Chair. Is the rationale behind the renewal and the renewal of once and we have to a new application needs to be made is largely a result of the change in coastal environments, which can change quite rapidly. Within the space of 20 years and thereafter. So the new application is really a result of the fact that in 20 years' time the coastal environment would be significantly, or has the potential to be drastically significant. At least that was the rationale behind that.
Yeah. That's for a new application. But I'm not sure why we can say maybe renewed once. That's surely... I'm just thinking of this 20 years. I mean, 20 years, hey, it's a long time. Not more. All right, let's take out the renew. That may be a renewed one. That just doesn't make sense. If we award for a plea period of not more than 20 years, where often new applications must be made in terms of plea and plea. You happy with that? Okay. 68, 69, 70. Error. Forgot to delete full stop. That's a foolish thing. What's this? 2 years. Shouldn't we here have the wording where after a new application must be made? Like we did with the other one. So we're just making it 5 years, not more than 5 years. So to give that bit of space, but then we're after new. So it's quite clear you apply again. 74, this is not much. 76. 70. Semicolon error. Okay, then the partner's proposal, 79.
So
you have? Oh yeah, we've got that thing on the High Court, huh?
Yes.
And the high penalty. And the high penalty. They got one F. Looks like a stutterer of this. Aya. Huh? Who's the line function fellow agreeing it? I wonder if one says he's convicted or he's prosecuted. Just check that for me. I'm not sure one says convicted, because that gives you, I think if a person is being prosecuted for an offense in the High Court, the penalty limitations in da 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 do not apply. I think you think you can start by saying he's convicted. Person, if a person is prosecuted.
But Chair, if you cannot receive a penalty unless you are convicted. And I think that was the thinking behind putting the clause in. And it's,
well, it just doesn't read right. Maybe you can say guilty. Prosecuted and convicted.
Isham reminded me here that the normal wording for this is if a person is found guilty of an offence rather than convicted. That's the that tends to be the standard way it's drafted.
Yeah, okay, that must be it. I think it just sounds funny if you do it like this.
Oh,
yeah, but remember, this is a separate clause. This is not a conviction clause. This is a sanction clause.
Yes, correct.
It's telling you a court
correct.
Is. So that's why I'm saying I don't want to treat it as a conviction.
Sure.
You know, treat it as a sanction clause where you're not allowing the limitation on
sure,
of
penalties,
apply.
Correct.
So
no, that's correct.
The principle is right, it's just the wording must be sorted. I don't think. 81. Then 83, error again. And bid has come up. What is this all about?
Okay, Chair, this is what I alluded to at the last meeting, and you said you'd consider. We've been engaging with management authorities, and it occurred to us that there was actually a gap in the Act that we had completely missed. If you look at the structure of the Act, I'm going to try and cut this long story into a short one. You have provincial parks that MECs have control over. You have national parks, or national, let's call it national protected areas and provincial protected areas under the Protected Areas Act. Now, this FEMA had to talk to those as well. And what this Act says, if you look at Section 22, it gives MECs the power to excise protected, provincial protected areas from the coastal protection zone. Now, with the absence of a flip chart, which I usually like to use to describe these things, if you have the coastal protection zone, which is from the sea up to 100 meters and 1,000 meters in rural areas, that's the scope of this Act. What happens is within that coastal protection zone, which is now minus coastal public property, above the high water mark, you've got a protected area that runs partially or wholly within this coastal protection zone. This Act has given MECs and the Minister the power to excise a portion that terrestrial part of a park from the coastal protection zone. There's a lot of consequences that flow from that. One of them being that when it comes to, okay, but before I get to the consequences, the minister can do this when it comes to national protected areas. So MECs do for provincial protected areas, and the minister is the only one that can exercise this power in national protected areas. And also these other categories of areas that are mentioned in 871A to D. What has emerged is that in these national protected areas, you currently have a situation where we didn't look at all the other impacts or legal consequences relating to management of the coastal protection zone. The architecture of the Act is such that the MEC has the power to do almost anything that has to do with coastal protection zone. The Minister has the power to do anything when it comes to coastal public property, not MEC. MECs are coastal protection zones. There are certain exceptions, and these are the ones you see in 87.1. But what it didn't do is create the exceptions in national protected areas insofar as the MECs, any of the other powers of the MECs are concerned. So you potentially have a situation where in a national protected area, which falls under the auspices of the Minister, under Protected Areas Act, and ostensibly this Act, we've created an untenable situation where you've got MECs being able to make regulations, to set back lines, create all kinds of statutory mechanisms over national protected areas, which has never been the intention. So this is our attempt to fix that.
What about A? And B is a national protected area that I understand. C is straddling. That's a terrible word in legislation. Sounds like a cowboy walking around here. And then also a border. But A, is that all that, I mean, all areas 500 meters into the sea?
Yes.
So that's the whole coast?
Yes.
You're removing that from MECs?
That's how it was. That's how it initially was. Because it's part of coastal public property. Those extension of boundaries, also regulated functions.
You're putting an amendment into the Act now, so it means it can't be there.
But this is only in relation to the accession, but in relation to the other powers that MEC exercises, it's not there, which is why we added this subsection 3. And you'll see the same categories, the same areas repeated there.
I don't understand you at all.
Okay.
You're saying here that when it comes to the powers exercised by MEC in all those sections there.
No, only in relation to section 22, the power of accession. If you look at 87.1, 87.1 says, the minister must exercise the powers granted to the MEC in terms of section 22 to excise all or part of a protected area from the coastal protection zone if all or any part of that area falls within these categories. And that section 22 only...
No, 22 we're not amending.
Yes, it only talks to the accession.
But now in subsection 3, it's saying 25, 26, so not 22. It's now new sessions, 25, 26, 28, 28, 24, or 64, I don't see what else it lasts. Then it says any part of an area that extends into the sea for more than 500. So for all those sections now, for the 500 into
meter.
The sea is also going to apply to the minister.
It's also the minister.
So it's not just national coastal.
It's not just protected
areas,
no.
But isn't that a huge task you're taking over? It's the whole coast, 500 meters in, with all those sections.
Sure, there's already work being done on that by the department, and that was always how they understood it.
Work being done, but are we taking that away from provinces?
Yes, sure, that has always been the intention. Coastal public property has always been intended to be managed centrally.
But if this was our intention, why is the clause we put in now? Why didn't you introduce it like that?
Because that was the gap that we didn't take notice
that
of until...
That's a serious dam oversight.
Yes, it is, James. It certainly is.
Verse 26. Isn't the correct way to go and amend all those sections? Section 26, you've now given that power to the MSC, 28. You see, my difficulty is this. Look, go and look at 26. Or even 25, but let's look at 26 because I'm there. 26.1b. We say that the coastal boundaries of that must be adjusted by the minister. B must be adjusted by the MEC. C, a special management area determined by or adjusted by the minister. C, municipality. D, adjusted by the municipality. So that is what we're saying. Now suddenly we don't say that as far as B is concerned, the part that the MEC adjusts, we want to now that read minister.
Only when it comes
to
these areas.
But it's terrible. I mean, it's a terrible way of legislating. I mean, how do you, you've got MEC written there, then you go elsewhere in the back of the act and say, replace MEC with minister.
All these would follow the way the 87.1 was done, which
you want to say. No, you're not following at all. Yeah, look at 26.1. Look there particularly at it. You've got an A, you've got a B, you've got a C, you've got a D. So you want to take the MHC's power away. Now you go elsewhere in the Act, you don't say, where you see MHC, read minister.
What should be done is we could say subject to or cross-reference it here in this section. So this section, which is how they dealt with 22 and
18. No, you may has just replaced B with minister. But that doesn't explain why you're going to allow the municipalities to have the power.
No, sir, it doesn't apply to the minister unconditionally. It only applies to the minister when it comes to these areas. That's the difficulty. Otherwise, the MEC continues to exercise those powers. Except for categories A to B. It's only when it's channeled with the national protected area where it extends the borders of the country.
Yeah, but it's the whole coast. It's the whole coast, 500 meters. So it's from Maputo to Orange River. That whole coast now is going to be the minister.
Chair, the minister has the power in any event to do, because it's only the coastal protection zone goes beyond the high water mark. So landward, it's a much bigger area.
Advocate, you're talking about a lot of things. All I talk about is what I read. The minister must exercise a power granted to the MSC in section. Now I'm looking at 26.1b, because that's what we've got there. With respect to the coastal protection zone, if such power relates to all or any of the part of an area that extends into the sea for more than 500 meters from a high water mark. So what I'm saying is, that power now is for the whole coast, for 500 meters into the sea. We're giving the power now, taking it away from the MSC in terms of 26.1b and giving it to...
Chair, I have to A is actually confusing this.
What is it you're trying to do? Explain to me again.
Okay, what we're trying to do...
The MSC's got all the powers in this law. Now
yes.
You're trying to take it away.
Not, we're only trying to take it... I think the 500 meter thing, the way it's reading, is creating confusion. If, look at the categories B to D. We're saying that the MEC exercises all those powers in 26 and 28 and all those other sections mentioned in every area except if it's a national protected area, except if it's between two boundaries, a boundary, coastal boundary between two provinces, and if it goes up the borders of the republic. Those are the only instances in which the minister exercises the powers that belong to the MEC. Which is why A is worded badly, and I think that A is a problem in this chair. If I can suggest that we re-look at that A section and take that out, that we just took when we looked at 22, but when you read it, it actually doesn't make sense.
Well, a better way to do it is to amend 26B. Except, then you put except there. Then you can read it. But now you also realize the difficulty I have is that we're making substantive changes and no one knows about it except us. I'm going to say relook this whole thing, because I don't know what we're trying to do. And if we're trying to do it and we're substantially taking powers away, the problem is no one has commented on it now. It's going to be very difficult for us to do that unless we can clearly see what it is we're doing. At least if you put there, if you put in 26.1b, I haven't read the other books, I can't advise, but let's say in 26.1b, you say that are the protection owned by the MSC in accordance with section, except you create an exception, say except when it's a national da-da-da, whatever pocket is and so on, whatever you want to create there, then it will be the minister. You say that, and then you say in consultation with the MSC.
Yes.
So at least that you don't completely just take it away without notice.
Chair,
but then you give the minister a role to play and a veto role to play.
Okay, Chair, can we try that and then bring it back? We did building in a consultation clause here, but I think it's probably best if we do it the way you suggested.
Yeah, because you see, we would want to, I mean, at this stage, if in our wisdom we previously said coastal protection zones are demarcated by MSCs. In our wisdom, we said that previously. Now, the thinking may have changed. Where the minister of national minister has actually got a role to play, now the better way to do it then, because we haven't consulted, is to say, except by a minister in consultation with the MEC. So at least then there's a veto of both of them. And then if you want to change it in the law next time, then you can come and do that process properly and change it. At least this one will at least be give the minister a role to play, but not completely remove the MEC at this point. Without consultation, it becomes problematic. Try and redraft it like that, and then we'll have a look at it, okay?
Thank you, Chair. But I think we just need to keep the spirit of what we're trying to do on this session, which is currently the MEC can get into a national park and create different zones. So we're trying to remove that, so that the MEC doesn't have power.
You can't remove it without telling the MEC you're going to remove it. That's my problem.
So I'm saying
to you as a compromise at this stage, we'll say the minister does it, but in consultation.
Yes,
so you give the MEC retains the veto. But unfortunately, you messed up here, to be blunt about it.
Yeah.
So we can't now just go and remove it. I can see your point. And if you've done it properly, by bringing it in the original bill, I would have supported you fully, because that power should rest with the 500 meter. I don't understand yet, so I'll think about that one. But at least the national park ones, I fully understand. But the problem is you've not consulted with that, you see, and that's my problem. So, and at least let's try and keep it as, and then you guys, next time you bring an amendment there, then you can change it completely if you want to. But it will be difficult for us as a committee to do that, to completely remove something from an MEC without them ever being aware that such a law was introduced, okay? Because I don't know now what their counter-argument shall be. Could have been a lot of counter-arguments, I don't know. Okay, so that's going to be relooked. And then 89, then 91 is the error. So not delete full stop and replace the semicolon. So this is a whole lot of error there. With your phonetics. Person to stop activity.
If you recall, it was the you didn't like the use of a legal term "state" for the activity and required us to replace it with "stop."
Yeah, I know. I said immediately "stop," but they keep this "stop." That's fine. 93.
There was also a particular request to keep in the pipeline discharge.
Yeah.
Stuff.
The poo. We don't want the poo reports to disappear. It's part of our national heritage now, with these youngsters throwing it all over the place. Yeah, it would be horrible if you remove that. We want to know what's going on with the poo. Information from commercial with us. Okay. All right. 95. That's just a different reference. In which case the lease immediately lapses. Oh yes, this is the lease thing.
That's great. You specifically asked us to clarify it because it was kind of hanging in the air and wasn't sure what happened to it when it was finished, and this is how we've attempted to do it. And it would be the greatest.
I thought we said much more than this. We're going to let the lease continue for 2 years. Requiring a permit, one correctly worded. I mean, you can't, in which case the lease immediately lapses and then you apply. When the lease is lapsed and you still don't have a use permit, so there's a vacuum.
Looking at subsection 3, Chair, unless the person referred to is reserved.
Shall lapse within a, you should probably say within a certain period, unless an application for coastal use permit has been made. So you make it subject, in the case where they need a permit, you make it subject to them applying for the permit, and that then, you know, will, and you have to say,
small Roman 2, B2, be something like, in which case the activity shall or must immediately be halted and an application made. But I think the point of 3 is that the 2 year, the 24 months is to give the VC the opportunity to apply. So if he's not applied within 24 months, surely the lease must lapse.
Now this is only, it says it's not an offence.
Yeah, I think that...
Now that's why I'm saying we discuss much more here. I don't think everything is captured.
I think that in 2, 24 months after the commencement, unless the terms of the lease provide for a lapse earlier, or B says the lease relates to an activity that's listed.
3 is just basically telling you that if you've applied within the 2 years, then whatever activity you still perform won't be, I don't know what
won't be an offense.
Not an offense. It must be, you know, it's basically said that that's fine. You can still continue with it in those 2 years. You don't have to say it's not an offense. So that's the one thing. But I think the bigger problem is the B one.
Yes, because the lease is anyway in 2 years.
Because the point is, if you now have it as a prohibited activity, then the lease should immediately lapse and the activity should immediately stop. And it looks like you can't, I mean, obviously there's a separate application for a permit, well that's separate from that. But the bigger one is that if you take a matter which is an activity which is listed but not prohibited. So it looks to me under section 65 there are two types of things that can happen. There's a listed activity which is prohibited, and there's a listed activity which is maybe restricted, maybe to use a better word. The issue is, it can't be open-ended like this for the permit. I mean, surely You must let them, if it's a listed activity, it means they must, it must end quicker than the 2 years. So you have to say that they must apply within a certain period, and then that will lapse.
I think what happened here is it looks like the subsection 3 was intended, when it didn't capture it, was intended to be a transitional provision, not to talk to an offence, but rather to talk to that,
activity. That period, yeah. That's fine.
And I think we need to reword that to talk to the validity of that activity pending the application.
That's not right with the offence. But my worry is we haven't conceptually yet cracked the other one.
But are they not linked, Chair? Because if you agree with an activity that needs a permit, then you're given a certain amount of time.
The thing is, you're distinguishing between just an ordinary lease of an ordinary activity and a lease of a listed activity. You have distinguished in the Act between those two. Now, I haven't read Section 65, so I don't know how valid that distinction is.
No, there's a prohibited list and a list of activities that need a permit. Those are the two lists. The one is you can't continue with it at all, and the other is you can, but you must apply for a permit.
Yeah, but you see here, in one, is the overall clause that tells you must give the document. In two, it says that lease will stop after 24 months. Any all lease.
Yes.
Except. So now you're creating an exception. You're saying if the lease is already going to lapse, it's going to lapse. If it's an activity that's listed in 65, then if it's prohibited, you must
stop.
But you're then saying there is a situation which is not the situation in the beginning of two, which is an ordinary lease that's going to lapse after 2 years.
Yes.
You're saying there's also a situation where there's a listed activity where you require a permit.
Yes.
But there's a lease now.
So you've got to apply for that permit.
But you see, you're already making it an exception, so it can't, the ordinary 24 months can't apply. So you must now say, requiring a permit will immediately lapse unless the person applies for a coastal use permit within 3 months, whatever you want to make it out of. That's the only way, I mean, otherwise you must scrap Roman 2. Then it will just fall under the ordinary one. But if you want to make a distinction between those leases that are not listed activities and that are listed activities, you want to make a further distinction between within listed as prohibited and restricted for having a permit, then those have to be spelled out and then there have to be different processes of it. And then there's three, which just basically is to say, that whatever you do within you basically must continue with your activity until your lease lapses. That's really what it is. Because your lease will lapse within 2 years, you can continue with activity. In one it will continue, in A it will continue until it lapses. In B it will immediately lapse. And in B2, it will lapse once you get your made application within a certain period. See, the problem that we can't legislate for is we can just say you made the application within a certain period. I mean, if that authority then takes longer, then there's not much you can do. And you have to then allow it to take for the lease only to lapse once the... No, maybe you must spell it all out, that the lease will then lapse there once the permit has been granted. It will immediately lapse if you've not made the application within, say, 3 months. But will in any case lapse with whatever. You have to put that in, if it's not been done within a certain period. Because if not, then it means you can only extend that to a longer than 2 years, just because the application hasn't been processed. So you then give them a way out. So you're going to have to look very differently at each one and the consequences that have to be. And then until the lease lapses, that's what Matthew must say. Until the lease lapses, you can continue with your activities under the lease. We'll just put that simple.
You also need to say that if the permit is not granted, the
But that you mustn't do there, you must do it. That is a consequence, or you must do all that. That's why I said you're going to have to explain the top one much more. The top one you have to spell out more in detail. Because you can say lease or lapse unless you do it within 3 months. Now, if you do it within 3 months, and then the application takes another 5 years, then that consequence you have to spell out what it is as well. And then you'll say, once you've been granted the license, then your lease lapse. You have to say that. Other, Not been done. Well, no, I mean, if you're asking for permits, so as soon as they give you the permit, the lease will lapse immediately. You're asking for a permit. Because it's a listed activity. You want to create special procedures for it. So you're going to have to spell all that much more. Now, we had a long discussion about this. Clearly, everything didn't sink in. Now, it's giving you another shot at it.
No, Chair, it's extremely difficult because we're not... We've been trying to look at other clauses that deal with similar things, and it's, and we possibly made mistakes with those as well, and we'll have to relook at it. But so we understood it when we read it. Now that you're raising these things, you're really just asking us to put in a time period and to clarify that once you get the permit that it lapses.
I didn't put the clause here.
No, I understand. But
someone put the clause here to say that there's going to be listed activities and they must be treated differently.
Yes,
then someone says, but there are two types of listed activities. The one is prohibited,
yes.
Then it must just stop.
Yes.
Now that in its own right can create problems, but I'm not even going to argue about that. Because imagine someone is gleefully sitting there acting out their lease, and you then put them on a list that their activity is now a listed activity without them knowing about it. The next day you pass a law that says this law is now, your lease is gone.
Except that there will be a consultation process.
But forget that first. Well, you see, the problem with the consultation process is you're creating exceptions. So those exceptions are going to undermine that consultation process. So you can't assume the whole 2 years is still there because you've now created exceptions here to the 2 years. You want to stop certain leases quicker than 2 years. Now, if you want to do that, you have to spell out the legal consequences of it 100%. You can't leave it open-ended. I mean,
Yeah, sure.
As I said, I haven't read Section 65. So I don't know whether your categories are right here, whether you are. But I'm assuming that they're right, the two categories. But now you have to spell out the consequences of each of them.
Okay.
I imagine to make it a little bit safer, the one that's prohibited, I would actually attach a notice to it that it will immediately lapse upon the notice, receiving a notice to that effect, or something like that. Because the problem now is just one day it's gone. At least it's a notice to say it will lapse by a certain date, and that your lease will stop there. And then the permit one, you'll have to think very carefully through. There's a whole lot of permutations.
Mm-hmm.
If this is done, if they do apply, but it takes longer than to make the decision, what are the consequences of this? Okay. Otherwise you're going to pick up big problems, you're going to get dragged to the courts on these things. Alright, so a whole lot of rewording has to be done. Unlawful structures on personal property. You've taken out that the illegal squatting one.
Yes, sure.
Without, didn't you introduce the bill with that?
And I mentioned before, the state law advisors introduced the bill with that.
That then should be yellow. I don't care who introduced it.
Yeah, that's just an error. It's not yellow because it's not in the current bill. Remember, this is now a new, it's not in the original,
I thought you introduced the bill like that.
No, we didn't.
When I asked you questions about it, you told me that you didn't have it like that, and the law advisors put it in.
That's how
the bill came here.
No, Chair. Sorry, that was a misunderstanding. I'm talking about when the Act was first promulgated.
We can't talk about that. It was years back. You came here and put in the prevention of illegal. You told me.
No, I didn't.
That the law. Please, Mr. Arthur. Please, you're talking nonsense now. I'm telling you that that's why you've done this. I asked you the question.
is this going to make sure that rich people can get away with it? Why are you introducing it? I'm asked you. Then you told me your law advisor introduced this, you did not introduce this. I can't care less who introduced it. That is what the bill came to us. Then I said, go back and check if this is going to only protect poor people or not. You said, yes, you'll go and check. You came back now and it's now in square brackets. So it's been taken out without any explanation why and without the color being yellow and things like that. That is what happened. Don't tell me not like that.
Chair, I think it was my fault. Let me just explain what happened to try and redeem myself. I misunderstood what you said. It wasn't in this version that the state law advisors introduced it. It was in the act promulgated at the first instance that they insisted on us putting this in. And then you did ask me to go and check this, and I put it in the table of comments and given an explanation. And I thought that they amended the act, but this act, as it said, does protect rich people and poor people, which is why I must subsequently delete it or propose it for deletion. It's not in the bill that introduced. This is as it stands in the Act. The deletion is now something that I'm bringing to the committee based on your request for me to go and investigate it. And if you look at the table, on page 20, I give an explanation of it, Chair. You see, it says that currently the Act makes demolition of illegal structures subject to the Prevention of Illegal Eviction from Unlawful Occupation of Land Act.
Which page is in today's document?
Page 20 of the table.
Today's document?
Yes, Chair.
Is this not the table of today?
Yeah, that table. If you look at page 20, it says 96 transitional provisions on existing local structures.
Currently, the Act makes the demolition of illegal structures subject to prevention. The further committee pointed out that this could potentially involve them as a fair advantage. The department requested to research the Act and address the committee on the proposal to provide the chair with copies of the Act. The transitional provision requires the owners of individual
say to Molly's in 21 or 12 months. We're arrested. This is not done. Let the bond demolish and the government process will be in the next few minutes. So if only remove the reference to the Act, you still not have provided any enforcement tools.
Chair, that comes in the second part of it.
Because there were other issues.
So subsection 4 is where there's an order given. We discussed it and we agreed that B under 1 stands on its own. It just says you must either do that or you must do that. So we said that if you just demolish the building, you don't tell anyone about it. That was the issue. And then we said, shouldn't you be telling someone, and shouldn't there then be the possibility of... Now, you've only linked it to where there's an... If a person in terms of so-and-so is obliged, you've created no obligation under B. So 4 and 3 doesn't apply. So it's B particularly that we discussed.
Chair, I recall that one of the issues there was that with the demolition, that there had to be a mechanism that that forces them to do it, and if they don't, they must bear the cost of it. And then I looked at subsection 3, which actually says that if a person in terms of 1 or 2, which includes A and B, is obliged to demolish the building or structure and to restore the site to the original condition, fails to do so.
The words are is obliged.
Yes.
Now go back to 1 point.
Yes.
Show me the obligation.
Subject to subsection.
The word says either. How is either an obligation? It's either A or B. So how does either create an obligation?
A person who before the Act took effect had unlawfully constructed a building or other structure on PPP, or who, when this Act took effect, occupied building or other structure unlawfully built on Gold Roberts property, must within 12 months of the commencement of the section.
Either
apply for a coastal
lease. What does either mean?
Or demolish.
What does either mean? It means you've got an option.
If only if it's listed, then they must apply for it.
No,
if not, then
either A or
yes.
B.
So either
and B is or. There's a or in between. So
yes.
Either. And B just is demolished. So they've got an option. They can apply for the permit and not demolish.
Yes,
and
can I just look at A? Because my understanding of this is that the either comes in because if the activity is listed, then there's a compulsion for them to apply. But if it's not listed, they must automatically demolish. And maybe that's not
what... It says must leave the comma in between either do A or do B.
Either do A, and that's the condition upon which A is applicable, if the activity is listed in terms of section 65(1)(a)(2). So if it's listed, then they must apply.
Even on your own wording, which I think is wrong, but even on your own interpretation, how will there be an obligation in terms of B? There's no notification, there's nothing. You just say you abolish the building or structure.
Chair, if we had to give notification, it would mean that we would have to know exactly where all of these illegal buildings and structures are, which we would not be able to know, which is why we're creating an obligation on them to do so. And otherwise, it would be impractical for us to actually implement it.
So you agree with me that B is completely and utterly worthless on your own explanation?
We're saying that they must demolish it, and that if they don't, and we go around and we see it, then we can issue them with a notice to force them to pay for it.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know how we draft, but this is completely wrong. It's not what is said there. It's an either. It's a clear either. There's an or that's written there. And you're telling me trading obligations. I mean, for the life of me, doesn't matter how generous I am in my interpretation, it just can't work like that.
Ch- Chair, I think maybe if we change that, take the either out and put and word it more, you know, in a more positive way to create that obligation, and it should sort it out.
Well, then you do. You say, apply, if it's a listed activity, then you apply, say it like that. If it's a listed activity, you apply for that. Then you must spell out when it's not a listed activity, what's going to happen.
Okay, I think
I mean, you know, and even if it's a listed activity, I mean, you still would want to demolish and rectify and remedy. So I think, you know, there's a whole lot of steps here that are not there. And that's why I just call it enforcement. How are you going to enforce this clause? I mean, if it's not, we're not linking it to things.
Okay, I think we need to tidy up that here, so we'll reword that. Chair, just a point of clarity, are you okay with subsection 3 as it stands?
Subsection?
3, which says, look, if provided we clear up and say, look, if it's listed activity, then this is what happened. If it's not, then you must demolish, create that obligation. Subsection 3 currently says, if you don't demolish, then you may be issued with a notice. That's the act as it currently stands.
Yeah, now this is the one where you now know who it is.
Yes.
And you oblige them to abolish and to to
restore
as well.
Yes.
Well, that starts getting there.
Okay.
I mean, if you're getting, I mean, if you've got other clauses, right, then that's the clause that will tell you how you do the demolition thing. A person referred to applies for close of use according to that's the consequence if it's refused. See, what you haven't catered for yet is you now only in A catered for the listed activity. I don't know what we're going to do about the activities that are not listed. What are we saying about those? They don't have to get permits?
The ones that are not listed.
Are they illegal to get permits?
They're illegal. The listed activities are the ones we get permits for. The ones that...
What's happening to the unlisted ones?
The illegal ones are illegal, and that's what we need to make clear in this.
Yeah, but you see, in A now, you're only dealing with listed. So there's no way we said what happens to the ones that are not listed.
Well, the demolition is what's supposed to apply to that, and that's not clearly spelled out. That's what we need to go and fix up.
But you see, I mean, I imagine that, you know, demolition may even apply to a listed one. Because in your sub 2, you say it's refused a permit. If there are permits refused, what happens? But surely there must also be demolition. So you have to think through all the consequences. If there's a listed that a minister approves, then clearly
you
must also make a decision on the rest of the stuff.
Yes.
For example, restoration. So if there's a listed which is not approved, then what is the consequences? Then, if it's unlisted, what is the consequence? You know, so you have to look at all those possibilities and spell them out. Once you've thought them through, you may be able to put them together like this in the same clause, but until you've worked it out, the start of it.
If not approved, it's not listed. Yes.
Okay, so that also needs further work. 96. All right, now I can't see you finishing all these major issues by tomorrow. I mean, you may do one or two of them, but that's not going to be good enough. Obviously, some of these things you're actually going to have to sit down with senior management because their policy directions that may be necessary. So I think what you must do is, this is the first time we've given you like proper instructions. Please, we said, yeah, that's okay, that's fine, and come with that. So on. So I think we must go now and sit down and try and get this in a more palatable form. Because literally, we must go through it once more and then it will be made right.
There's also the National Coastal Committee we haven't dealt with yet.
I know, that's fine. I'm not worried about that too much because we've agreed just taking out some of the stuff is not necessary. I think the copy you sent me or the someone sent me, the DG, she discussed it with me and it was basically not to make it obligatory for all those groupings. Like national departments, only if requested to be present. So, you know, that kind of thing. So that's not big policy issues. That's a drafting thing. It's quite easy for me. I'm worried about these other issues, you know, that may take a bit more work. You see, these ones, these are all technical stuff. These are not policy stuff. So this stuff we should be able to sort out, and you guys should be able to, in the department, get it right. I mean, just us discussing this thing, just now we also discussed on the lease thing, listed and unlisted. You guys really make up your mind. If you're going to differentiate, then differentiate. But then spell out different processes between listed and others. Okay, and then there are some more of the policy things, which is the really policy one, it's, I think, complicated, the reclamation one, okay? Okay, now that's already a lot of further progress. Now the mining thing is a huge thing, but I don't think we can do much more than do the resolution. And then spell out, I mean, you guys need to work out how we're going to spell it out, you know, what is going to be applicable. But I'll feel very uncomfortable if we leave this act just like open-ended, people somehow understand that another act applies to mining and another. I think we must create those links. Even if people tell you it's not really done, the problem is ordinary people will thank you much more for doing it like that, because at least they can read something and understand it, you understand? And how we're going to do that. So that's a little bit more complicated. Now, so we won't be able to have it ready by tomorrow, but that means that you have to be ready on the first day the Parliament comes back again, somewhere in October. On that Tuesday, I said this morning, on the Tuesday and the Wednesday we're going to do legislation. So we'll start with it then. You could let me have it beforehand so I can look at this and see if it's good enough, if there has to be further changes. Which means tomorrow after our two submissions, are the people finished the source? So then there must be here tomorrow. And you told me all the compromises have been made then. Mr. Shabalala, can I go to bed tonight sleeping well knowing that the compromises have been made and all I'm going to do tomorrow is rubber stamp?
Yes, sir. The only one.
Oh, yeah. Shabalala is Mohammed, the only one.
No, the definition of severe weather, that we just need a consultation with source. So because we need to put it on the business, so you can see.
That's your only problem in life, and that's not a problem. Advocates, the other advocates have many more problems than you. Alright, so tomorrow, three submissions, and SOARS, we should be able to finish relatively early, because SOARS, we've discussed so many times, and if you've accepted everything we've said, and just with some amendments, it should be right. You made all this compromise. You definitely redrafted things. You brought back room the CEO. Hey. Just so I can understand it, you colored it as well. Yes, ma'am.
I didn't hear the date that
it's the Tuesday when we come back.
Oh, the 8th, okay.
It's the first 2 days we're going to do legislation, and the ICM will be one of the first ones we get.
Okay.
Or maybe even SOARS if it's just to finalize whatever they've done. But those will be the, and then the rest of the time we'll spend on all these other three bills. You know what we haven't had a briefing yet on? Is the mining stuff, we haven't had a briefing yet on the regulations. You've told us that this has been done, but you've never showed us where it's been done. You realize that, eh? Huh? Now the appeals of work I gave you guys, so you'll have to go and make those amendments and so on. I accept that, but at some stage you need to also do a briefing on the regulations, that you can show us all the things that you said in your input. You show us where in the regulation that will take place. Because today already some of these NGOs were asking, but is that so, and has it been done, and is it tight, and I can give them the answers. I can give you your general input, okay? Alright, can I say that whatever agitations we may have had with these bills, I think that it's not easy to work the way we're working at the moment, to process six bills. It takes a lot of doing, and I'm whatever criticism we have, we do understand that the department has tried their best so far. So people mustn't go and have a sleepless night over whatever has been raised. I do just think now we must try and now minimize the further amendments. So whatever was said today, I want senior management to sit down with, when the advocate has done these amendments, to sit down with them, go through them, and you guys must check whether these things have been done. Because every time you bring back and we send you back for amendments, the chance of getting smaller and smaller of the bill being passed. You guys must realize that now. I mean, from now on it just gets difficult. So I really want you to, Mr. Abada, you in charge of the overall of that section, I really want you guys to, if Advocate Radia has made her amendments, they have a meeting and make sure you guys go through it and check that all the things we've asked is done, that you guys haven't messed up. Then when SAWS is there, the same thing, ACWA. Now remember, there's a lot of amendments under ACWA that is coming from the other bill that has to be done. So there's a lot of work there. So you guys must really sit in the next 2 weeks and get all that done. In those first 2 days we come back, we literally have to give you final instructions. So if there's one of these bills that are still huge problems, I'm serious, you're going to have problems then getting it past me, okay? Because the whole next week I must deal with BBR. I've already said 1 week away. So the next week after that we have to beat RRR. And I think there's literally 2 weeks left for the term to be finished. And we have to process these bills and pass them in the committees and still do that 3 days before we debate it in the House. That's how tight things are. Okay? So the top management must please go sit down and prioritize these things, eh? As far as my priorities are concerned, obviously the mining stuff are at the top, but as long as with the mining stuff we can get close to finalization before the end of the year, if we have to debate it early next year, I don't mind that. But that still gives the NCOP. It would have been better to do it now, but I can already see how we're running into difficulties. And I've looked at their public hearings, it's very complex, a lot of things have been raised. So, and then the other priorities will be to try and definitely get this ICM and SAWS out of the way quickly, because we've now processed them for a long time. Then to spend whatever time we've got on ACWA and on protected areas, and try and get that and mining to some almost state finishedness. Okay? Okay, you can actually say to me, what's happened in the NCOP? How far is the bill? Huh? At 6 to 9. So they're voting on it. And did you guys find any further amendments? So as far as you're concerned, there was no further amendments. So then it just, it comes back to, what's it, the 7-6? So that bill has just come back to us, we just approve it immediately. So that'll take 1 minute. If there are no serious amendments. If there are serious amendments, you must call me quickly. Then we can talk about it. Because I must get my whip then to talk to the NCOP and not, that process can't now go into another direction. Okay? Well, now that bill is finished as far as we're concerned. It's just the NCOP. Alright, thanks to the members. Let's quickly tomorrow, we'll try and just do that in SAWS and hopefully we can finish early. Okay? Thanks a lot, members. Thanks a lot, department.